We are back.
That's on me, baby.
The day after Spence Porter, in what was a fight for the ages at the Staples Center last night. I was there live. I got Fred and Tom here with me to react, to break it down. Thanks for being a listener. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button. Let's jump right into this, guys. We had what came off live as one of the most intense 12-round fights we've ever seen. Let me start with this, Tom. Sitting there live, in the arena, it was incredibly loud for 12 rounds. But, like, how did it come off on TV? Did it say, like, did you have that same experience? Like, you were watching, for sure, a fight of the year contender and probably the winner, but also one of the all-time great pay-per-view matchups that lived up to the hype.
Oh my God. I mean, I love the fight. I mean, I've said this coming in. I'm a huge fan of Spence. I knew Porter was going to push him. I favored Spence and even kind of cheekily said, like, you know, I could see a knockout coming. But, you know, I felt this was a fight that was going to push Spence physically. And it's just one of those great things, like unstoppable will against immovable force, sort of the cliche kept being associated with this fight. But it was like, you're going to see Spence, or you're going to see Porter push Spence physically, and it's going to be great seeing an athlete, you know, push to his limit in that way. And yeah, it really lived up to it. I mean, I think of speaking of, like, you know, it can never compare to be in person. I mean, I always am trying to get people to go to fights live if they haven't. I mean, I've been lucky enough to be at Cotto Martinez when, you know, that first round was absolutely crazy in the Garden, Puerto Rican fans going insane. Wilder Ortiz when Ortiz dropped Wilder, and then when Wilder knocked Ortiz out.
Didn't exactly drop him. That's
right. He didn't go down, but, you know, heavily hurt him. And, you know, had
being
him,
a PBC shill, Tom, that was egregious of you.
Well, it resulted in a 10-8 scorecard on all three judges' cards for that round without going down. But anyway, you know, I just think of, like, the loudest reactions I've heard. And, you know, it does kind of suck. Like, that part didn't come through. I didn't really have that's something I've heard, you know, from you. We were talking beforehand about just how, like, loud it was in person. And I heard on another podcast they were saying, like, the crowd is on their feet for a lot of the fight. And, like, for whatever reason, like, a production decision, they didn't really, like, focus on the crowd as much. That was something, like, for Spence Garcia with that, like, 47,000-person crowd, they also were kind of a little bit, like, they didn't really get into that for whatever reason. But, I mean, look, I was into it enough watching it. You know, I was following different, like, feeds online, so I got to enjoy that part of it. You know, it was, like, you know, it was just a great, like, it felt like a culmination of the fight. It had already been a great action fight, and that was one of those things that just took it to the other level. I mean, when that happened, you had a definitive winner. I mean, we'll get into the scoring later, but I mean, it was hard to imagine at that point Spence wouldn't win regardless of how anyone saw it, and that was really an exclamation point on what was already a great fight.
What about you, Fred? You think that this was one of the best pay-per-view fights that you've seen that lived up to the hype of being maybe what people expect a pay-per-view should be?
I like the fight. I thought it was really good. It was a lot better than, like, if you're paying attention to Twitter on a Friday, it was almost like there was this wave of people shitting on the fight. You know, it sort of started the week before, but no, it was a great fight. I know Tom was probably extra excited seeing Trap Boy Freddy there. So, you know,
sorry, I have, yeah, you're going to have to explain that to the folks at home right now.
He's the guy who brought Spence in. Tom.
Oh, my God.
Okay, yeah, I'm down with that guy.
Tom, let's be real. If you saw that guy, you'd call the cops.
You know, I think I know who that guy was. I had just happened in the last week to watch the they did, like, a post-fight show for Spence Garcia where it was, like, Spence in his locker room, and, like, people are coming up to him saying hi. They have all, like, the Dallas Cowboys coming in and saying, like, what's up to Spence. And the whole time there's some, like, super weird looking guy sitting next to him with, like, you know, covered in, like, gold and diamonds and stuff with, like, a full grill. And, like, I'm pretty sure that guy, like, brought, at first I was like, why is that guy next to, like, get that guy away from Spence. But then it was like, he's God, like, kind of some kind of rapper or something.
It's because Tom owns a plane that's worth more than all that jewelry combined.
Tom is going to cross the street in his living room. Just like with the guy.
Oh, man. Look, that guy just, like, a seedy element. Like, it's not about race, but.
No, it was really good. I don't know personally if I was that excited into it. I thought it was a great fight, but I've been on the edge more. To me, it was just Spence beating a dude, so I knew it was going to happen. It did. Great fight, though. Great
fight. You know, let's jump into this, because I thought that this could be, and time will tell, okay? So don't get caught up with what I'm about to say. But I think time will tell, but this could be the defining fight of this decade. I mean, you have a 12-round war. If Spence goes on to be something special, which there's a good chance that that will happen, that we'll look back in 8 years and we'll realize Spence was like this fight, this generation's like best guy. And we could look back and say, damn, this fight really defined things. Now, time will tell, of course. Everyone's got to do their job. Spence has got to keep winning. Porter's got to still be really good, and things have got to go from there. But let's get into this, because the fight was exciting, no matter how you want to slice it up. But Fred, I'll start with you. Who do you think deserves more credit for the fight being so exciting?
Spence. Because Spence wanted to stand his ground, and his whole big thing was not to box, you know, as much as he normally does. Like, as if Spence could do it all. So that's all I saw. He's standing there, and he was dealing with Porter as he came in. For me, it's, I don't know. I know a lot of people are old, oh, Porter, but that's what Porter does, you know. Like, you never once saw Spence do that drop back counter that he usually does when he just wants to box dudes.
You know, he actually did.
Not as much as he usually does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what about you, Tom? It sounds like you're going to defend Porter. Or you're just going to say that Porter deserves more credit for this fight being so exciting.
I won't go that hard, but look, I give Porter a lot of credit. I mean, it's funny. There's a parallel in this fight, like Fred alluded to the list. Like, I don't like to dwell on negativity. I don't like to feed the trolls. But there was, like, a lot of people shitting on the fight coming in on Twitter, you know, just inexplicably. You know, one member of the Sunday Puncher universe, Babs, just like really went on record from the time the fight was announcing, like, this is going to be horrible. Just you know, why it didn't never really made sense. But I think back to when Thurman fought Porter, and like, I was at that fight live in the Barclays Center coming in. I was super excited about it. And that was a similar one. People were shitting on it. And like, there was even like that one really separate even from this one. Like, I remember when I checked back the next day, like, Steve Kim was like shitting on the fight. Ooh, like, he was like live vlogging shitting on it when it was like, you know, that was one of those things. Like, I was so, you know, it was like it more than lived up to expectations. And just to bring it back to Porter, it was like people didn't know what Porter had, you know, if the Brook fight had taken something out of him. People didn't really know how good Thurman was. And I mean, that fight to me was just so good, especially in person. Like, every time like Thurman would land a bomb, Porter would just, you know, rush back. And yeah, you know, Porter can be physical, he can, you know, make it a little rugged in there, but I give Porter credit for pressing the fight. Like, I really did not think he was going to be that physically capable. I didn't think that he was going to be that mentally tough. I mean, you know, he took that shot in the 11th, which would have been an absolute knockout on the canvas face first for any normal, you know, fighter, let alone just an average person. Still landed some good shots, you know, through the final bell. So, yeah, I mean, I appreciate the physicality. Porter came in absolute top-notch shape. Both guys were. And I don't mean that to discount Spence, but it was like I already came in expecting a lot from Spence, and Porter was there to push him to the limit. And, that's what's great. Like, we've talked about this in the last year related to different matchups, where there's some fighters you never really got to see everything that they could bring. You know, like, we talked about that going into Spence Garcia, that Garcia might ask things of Spence we haven't seen. With, you know, Garcia fighting Spence, we might get to see, you know, Garcia push the limit. And that, you know, that was an okay fight in its own way, but it wasn't like this, where you got to see both guys put it on the line, and, you know, in such a physical way. I mean, a chess match, boxing match can be fine, but I mean, this was, you know, we got to see them push their physical strength, their punching power, their chin. You know, it was like every aspect of their games got tested in this fight. You know, it's like, I sort of get what Fred was saying, that Spence decided to brawl more than box. And that's true to some extent, but, you know, we got to see an extra gear in Spence we haven't seen before, and I think in Porter as well.
I'm going to agree with Fred here, but I'm going to take a different angle. Spence deserves more credit for this fight being as exciting as it was. And you got to give Keith Thurman a lot of credit too. Because look, the book is out on how you fight Sean Porter. There's not too many ways you deal with Porter. And we're assuming he doesn't come out and do what he did with Ugas, which was nonsense. But there's a couple of ways you fight Sean Porter. You either A, buckle under the pressure, and we've seen guys do that. Devin Alexander, Paulie Malignaggi, these guys buckled under the pressure. Or if you want to beat him, you let him smother himself. You stay there. He's going to lunge in. You just kind of lean forward, and now you're chest to chest. And if you and the rest of the fight, you jab him, you fight from the outside, and that's what Kell Brook did. Now, Spence and Keith Thurman made a concerted effort to say, I'm going to maintain distance, and I'm going to box him at mid-range. I will not let him smother me, and even if that means I'm going to get hit. And we've talked about this in the past about Spence. You can go back and listen to the podcast in the wake of the Lamont Peterson fight. We said, Spence knows he's going to get hit. And I do not understand where people get off thinking that Spence is some slickster boxer with supreme skills on the outside that he could have just boxed Porter's ears off. Are you guys kidding me? Have you watched Spence's career? That is not what you see. Errol Spence is reminiscent of a Gennady Golovkin type of fighter who fights with their feet planted at all times. That enables him to get off power shots, enables him to punch to the body the way he does. Yes, but it also enables him to absorb punishment from his opponents in order to dish it out. And we saw that in the Lamont Peterson fight, where Lamont Peterson was tagging Spence. Did it matter? No. In the same way, go rewatch the Kell Brook fight. Spence fights with his feet planted. He's not bouncing around. He gets him at mid-range. And Brook lands shots. So much so that British fans thought that he was somehow in control of that fight. But go back and watch it. He wasn't. It wasn't close. Spence fought that fight like he knew it was only a matter of time. And you saw he was right. So going into this fight, how on earth are people going to think that Spence is going to sit there and pull a Floyd Mayweather on Sean Porter? You got to check how you perceive a fighter, because don't compare him to Floyd Mayweather just because they look like him. Spence is where he's at because we know he's not here to be a slickster. He's not trying to be defensive for 12 rounds. Spence is the truth because he punishes guys. And so Spence made the effort here to say, I'm going to stand there with Porter, because there was, I mean, guys, you would be silly to not acknowledge the possibility heading into the fight that it could have been ugly, that Spence could have just stepped into Porter and they could have had head clashes. They could have just hugged and tried to body each other around for 12 rounds, and that didn't happen. Spence took a step back when he needed to, and he boxed and he fought. And then they turned it into an inside fight. I mean, you know what's funny is Golovkin and Canelo, two Mexican fighters, fought two fights. And they did not have, their fights did not come close to Mexican style, but this one did. And these guys don't pass themselves off as Mexican. So, I don't know. This fight was totally exciting, and I think Spence deserves all the credit here. Sean Porter showed up, and he did Sean Porter, okay? And guys, I want to ask you guys this question. Is there a fighter in the sport that does what Sean Porter does? I think Sean Porter is the most unique fighter in all of boxing. No one does what this guy does.
Thinking that very specifically throughout the, you know, just trying to process how to think about that fight. And I thought about that coming in, but I mean, even, you know, this is another notch in his belt in sort of Sean Porter being Sean Porter. And yeah, he's a completely unique fighter. You know, he blends like, you know, short guy boxing with brawling with, you know, all these football moves. And, you know, we've always kind of known that, but
I don't know about he's also really agile. Like, he's so light on his feet, and the dude is built like a tank. He's like a fire hydrant in the ring. He's short, he's bulky, but his feet are really fast. The way he was able to turn on Spence and put himself, there was a moment, I think it was early, like the third round or something, where like he swings, and before you know it, he's behind Spence. And now he didn't do anything. It wasn't like the most useful thing to do, but it was a testament to show that Sean Porter's footwork really underrated. I think you even made a GIF before the fight of Sean Porter showing off some of his footwork, his feet work.
Yeah, against Ugas, and another one with the Danny Garcia fight.
Fred, I got to ask you this question. I know you're not going to like it. Do you think that, and look, we all agree here, this was a competitive fight. Don't matter how you score it, it was competitive. It wouldn't have been as exciting as it was if it wasn't competitive. But do you think the fact that this was, actually, I don't want to ask you, Fred, because you're going to steal my take.
You do this again. You're always telling me don't take my take, and these are my takes. And then I sound like a dummy now.
No,
you're stealing all my juice.
No way. I think Fred is going to give a take that I said earlier, but if he doesn't, he's pretty creative because I think I took the words out of his mouth. Also, it just happens that we agree. So if you come up with a take, very likely I would agree with it, and vice versa. But anyway, do you think the fact that this fight was competitive, does it help or does it hurt Spence's pay-per-view potential as like a big star?
Fred, go on.
Jesus, now Tom wants to steal it. God.
Relax, guys. I'm just going to I'll take over from here.
Yeah, fuck.
Go for it.
No, I think actually this helps. Like last week we were thinking, you know, what would put Spence into the star status, you know, and you thought, okay, maybe a big knockout would do it. Like shoot him right into like the star. Like now he's the man, he's blah, blah, blah. But I think this fight actually being competitive sort of does it, because this is what I think. Like, I really liked the fight. I thought it was a great fight. But then it's also the way people are going off. It's like, have you ever really watched these guys fight before? Because you just said, like, this apparently is what not. Spence does. Yeah, this is what Spence does. Spence is a dog. You look at the Brook fight. Brook is pushing him around, but like Spence was flowing with it. That's what he does. He flows with a fighter, and then he gets shots in. You know, so I think people, even though I know a lot of people have watched these guys, but they seem to not remember what they fight like. So I think this sort of helps Spence because it sort of introduced Spence to a bigger group of people again, you know, because like that, like I said, that fight, they did what, 16-7 for attendance. And of course, you know, it's not total sales, blah, blah, blah. But that's
a lot of people.
And this, I think, fight sold very well, you know. I think the way the fight went, that people were so excited by it, is what will push Spence.
Well,
especially because Fox is going to be just jumping all over him, as they already are. They already got his next fight lined up.
So. Yeah, I think Fox is all in on the Spence business. But I think a lot of people may have watched the Mikey Garcia fight and thought that that was the real Spence. No. And it's yep. It would be stupid to compare how Spence performed against Mikey Garcia to how he would perform against Sean Porter. Because even if we said Mikey Garcia, the lightweight monster Mikey Garcia, showed up at 147 with no loss to his skills or his power or anything like that, Spence wouldn't have fought him the same way that he fought Sean Porter. There's no chance he does. They're not the same fighter. We just literally talked about how Porter might be the most unique fighter in all of boxing. Here's what I'll say, okay? This helps Spence's pay-per-view potential. And to me, I've been around boxing forums for a long time. And I've been part of boxing social media. And I've talked to lots of boxing people for years and years and years. And I'm sure, Tom and Fred, you can co-sign this. You've been here with me. And what is one of the main complaints we've heard over the course of our tenure as boxing fans? Well, people always complain about, well, these fights on pay-per-view, they don't live up to the hype, and these guys don't actually fight. Floyd Mayweather, too defensive, he's boring. It's a boring fight. Well, okay. People think that that's going to lead to some decline. Well, then Spence comes along, and he goes to war. How on earth does this work out? Like, oh, now should he fight more defensive? Like, what do people want? I think this serves to help, because now you know when you tune into Spence's pay-per-views or Spence's fights in general, you're going to get a good fight. And isn't that what people really want? A good fight? You know, I can't imagine you would pay your money for anything else. What do you think, Tom? Do you think this fight helped or hurt Spence's pay-per-view potential?
I mean, the overall fight definitely does. And I mean, compare this to, say, the Mikey Garcia fight. I mean, Mikey Garcia fight sweeping all the rounds. I mean, I always like to look at Google Trend numbers, and we like to clown on that. But it is interesting to see, you know, how much, like, conversation was driven afterwards, how much after the spike of the fight itself, you know, what sort of bump do you get for, like, the day and the week afterwards? And, like, to me, this is a fight which is a lot more, like, sticky in that regards. Like, I see people having a lot more interest in this fight. There's a few... I mean, it's funny. People are even denying that people were shitting on it beforehand, saying, of course we knew this was going to be an amazing... You know, it's like, what's a better compliment than that? I mean, the sort of revisionist history that, of course, we knew it was going to be a great fight. It is interesting, though, the topic of, like, does it help him or hurt him? I mean... That's like, I'm trying to keep things like snappy tonight, so I don't want to give a super long answer. But, you know, there is a crowd of people like who, you know, hardcore boxing fans. Let's talk about that. I think it's actually an interesting way to phrase this, who want to latch onto a fighter and think of them as being historically important. And we on this podcast, at least, have talked about how insufferable we can find Golovkin or Lomachenko fans who only seem to be really fixated on that element. Like, this person is worth following because they are historically significant, even if you're sort of like, you know, really pulling the wool over your eyes to even, you know, sort of think that in that way. I'm thinking of Golovkin even more so, and people were saying he was going to knock out Marvin Hagler. You
I
know,
still believe that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, regarding Spence from like hardcore fans, it's like, you still, yeah, I know. I'm just trying to keep it moving.
I know, Tom, keep it moving. Let's go.
You know, some people like coming out of the fight were saying, like, oh, well, this means Crawford will win. And it's like, if that's your reaction to the fight, to not even, like, pay attention to what you saw, to not respect the quality of Sean Porter relative to anyone Crawford has ever fought, and I mean, I really mean that. I mean, you know, really, I mean, so much better than anyone Crawford has ever fought. It's just like, you know, okay, there is that crowd who wants to see a fighter never get hit. I mean, Spence got hit in this fight. Fighters like score it. Knockouts, even if they're against, you know, set up handpicked opponents. And, you know, but I think from the standpoint of what Fox is trying to do, this is an incredible outcome. I mean, again, it was a super exciting fight. They can, you know, talk about it, really look back on it with bragging rights. I think, you know, a lot of people are viewing this as the front runner for Fighter of the Year, which is something which will add, you know, some historical significance to the fight, as much as I was clowning on it. I mean, this is something like you talked about earlier, like Spence is starting to develop his own legacy, and this is now, you know, going to be a significant fight in his career. Yeah, you know, I just think it's cool. Like, I don't need to watch someone knock out handpicked opponents. I mean, it's great to see, you know, athletes performing at a high level and putting on a show, and that's what we got last night. So, I think it's good for Spence. I think it's good for Fox. And I think it's good for me personally as a fan. I mean, this is the type of fight I want to see.
This brings us into the next part, which is, Fred, did Spence do enough in beating Sean Porter last night to claim his place as the best welterweight on the planet?
Yeah, of course. So you put on it. Now he's beaten Kell Brook, you know, who's a champion. Now he's beaten another champion, you know, who's out there. Manny, but Manny's got legacy. You know, Manny's not the top of the division.
Yeah, there was very good fighter. Trying to make that case last night.
Yeah, you know, yeah, Manny historically, yes, but as right now, no. This is Spence. You know, like I said, he's the truth, and he's starting to take over. And now he's showing it. He's number one for me, man.
What about Terrence Crawford? We got to go there.
Yeah, but what about Terrence Crawford?
Well, he's got to get his promotion somehow. So, talking about Spence, you know, we should bring him up.
He's got to latch on. Now he's going to be riding, you know, Spence's coattails to try to get notice. He's got to fight people. You know, this is a simple thing. And this is why Spence is fighting everyone, because they go, we want these fights made, and Fox is paying for it. You know, you always see this, and you'll see this on Twitter. No one brings up, they'll always say Arum or like Max Kellerman, who just
go ahead.
He had the segment on Friday. He had this segment on Friday, just trying to shit all over this fight, and once again blaming Al Haymon for this. It's no, if Crawford wants the fight, he would say to his manager, "Get me this fight. and they would go to Bob and say, get me this fight. If he really wants this fight and it's a fight about legacy and all this bullshit, then he's like, I will take this fight no matter what you're going to pay me. But he doesn't even give a shit. The dude's the he's like taking vacations. He's like Shane Mosley when he had to go to the dentist before, you know, taking a potential Floyd fight. You know, like, he's not. Like, you can't see a guy who had the dick punch fucking Amir Khan to win, and now he's going to take on the Mean Machine, you know, and then say, no, he's the real king of welterweight. Who's he fighting? Like, come on.
Well yeah, just to piggyback on that for 1 second, it's like, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, well, no, just like, Spence fought Brooke. He went to England. He took short money. And that's what he did. You know, it's really a lesson for anyone in the sport. It's like, for as much as people talk about avoiding other fighters, if you believe in yourself and you want to bet on yourself and you're willing to take short money, you can get a fight made. If Crawford said, I'm willing to take a 70-30 split or even probably a 60-40 split, he would be fighting Spence next, you know, especially if he was willing to do it on Spence's platform. Like, Spence went to England, knocked out Kell Brook, came back with a belt. Like, that can happen. You know, that's the thing, though. It's like, if you want to fight and say, I'm the A side and, you know, we need to do this on ESPN, the fight's not going to get made. So it's like, yeah. Anyway, sorry. Go on.
Well, no, but just a thing. Here's, again, like, because we talked about the Ali Act a bit, and Russell Peltz did a Ask Me Anything where someone asked him about the Ali Act. He said he doesn't think most boxers are even aware of it. The guys at the top might be.
Shocking.
But you still see. You still see, like, the way they'll talk about, well, Bob Arum has to do this. Bob Arum only has promotional rights. He can't dictate who guys really fight under the Ali Act. That's actually the manager's job. But everyone still acts like it's the old days where the promoter can control the whole thing. No. You know, it's like, that's if the fighter wants to fight, he says, I want this fight or nothing, you know. And that's it. Like, Spence didn't only take short money. He sat there and he got frozen out while Brooke and Eddie Hearn were trying to get bigger fights. So he sat there doing nothing because he couldn't take a fight and risk his mandatory status unless it was an IBF-approved opponent. And people are dumping on him. So he sat there and waited for his fight. He got his chance. And now everyone's like, oh, wait, no, now Spence has to fight everyone. You know, it's the same thing Floyd went through. Floyd's a draw. No one wanted to fight Floyd when he was dangerous and he wasn't the draw. But then as soon as he, you know, makes that huge fight against Oscar De La Hoya, he's like, well, now it's Floyd's responsibility to go. He's not running a charity. If Crawford could offer Spence a fight, then they could do it. But they can't offer him anything because he's got this whole entire PBC world that's open. No promoters, no argument. They've got networks. They got two networks potentially that will bid on their stuff. You know, it is like, why? It's no. Crawford can't sit there and go, well, he has to fight. You're meaningless. And Crawford even says, well, no, I don't need Spence. Well, now you're not going to get him.
Well, and he also says, you know, there's no ducking going on between the two of them. But here's the thing. And I've said this for a long time. I've went into detail line by line of Terrence Crawford's contract that he signed with Top Rank. And I believe that it expires in 2021. And I think that in the PBC side of things, they're like, look, we have opponents to take us to 2021. If Spence comes back against Danny Garcia in January and fights Pacquiao mid-year in 2020, let's say July or something, and maybe he does his mandatory because he's going to get stripped if he doesn't, and we're assuming he wins all of these fights, of course. He does his mandatory in November or whatever, and then we're in 2021. And you know whose contract is going to expire with Top Rank, we believe? Terrence Crawford. Well, now you don't have any excuse if Top Rank isn't in the picture to make the fight. And yeah, time has passed. But the only person that time is hurting at this point is Terrence Crawford because of the pool of opponents. And here's another thing.
And he's getting old, too.
Well, they're both getting old. That's a slippery slope for me because it's like everyone ages at the same. It's like when people are like, oh, well, Floyd waited till Pacquiao got old. It's like, whoa, so only one of them was aging? Only Pacquiao aged?
So no, Floyd. I'm saying Crawford's the old. Crawford's 33 right now, isn't he?
Well, my point is that Spence is beating all these guys that PBC has. And he will if he fights Danny Garcia, if he fights Manny Pacquiao. He'll have beaten two more guys that potentially Crawford could certainly use as opponents. So Crawford only stands to lose from Spence fighting everyone, as you said, But also he stands to gain by like getting top rank out of the picture and earning himself a much bigger chunk of the change when he ultimately does fight Spence.
Yeah, I'm but not they never to
justify
do that,
you know? Waiting, but it's like, look, that's probably the real reasoning that's going on behind closed doors. And even Crawford might be feeling that way too.
Yeah, you never know. But when Crawford's on Joe Rogan, he's like, he cares about the Hall of Fame. But the Hall of Fame is a bunch of goofy sports writers, like boxing writers, you know, that we make fun of all the time. And you go, and this is all legacy. What the fuck is
Crawford's
legacy?
Crawford's already a Hall of Famer. He unified a division. He is set for the Hall of Fame. The bar to entry for the Hall of Fame is super low unless you're somebody that the Hall of Fame writers don't like Roger Mayweather.
Yeah, or Gennaro Hernandez, or anyone that fought on the West Coast. You know, yeah, it's weird. But that's what I'm saying. Like, Chris Mannix is sitting here yelling about Terrence Crawford again. He's on a network where Demetrius Andrade was the first middleweight signed to the DAZN, and he can't get in a fight with anyone on the DAZN.
They refuse to match this guy with anyone, and I don't want
right,
to get
not
into
even
like...
in the conversation. But yeah, I don't know. It's like we're getting way off topic. I don't think Terrence Crawford really deserves to be talked about. You know, it's like
he's getting dumped on. I don't care, Tom. We're either going to dump on Terrence Crawford, or we're going to dump on you, Tom. we're attacking.
Our two attacking favorite someone. Targets. Although I love Terrence Crawford, and like, but I'll be realistic about Terrence Crawford. I love him, but at this point, you have to have Spence as the number one guy at welterweight. I mean, yeah. Terrence Crawford hasn't beat like a legitimate top five welterweight. Jeff Horn doesn't count. Sorry, I'd love to put him up there, but let's be real here. He's not okay, and so I mean. Coming out of the fight, did you guys change your opinion at all about Errol Spence? Did anything change about how you viewed him? Tom, you can go.
Yes and no. I mean, I certain things, like, again, it's like he didn't stop Porter, but it's like he landed an absolute knockout blow. You know, that says more about Porter's, like, titanium chin than it does about Spence's punching power. Like, Spence's output was good. I think, like... You know, he got hit with a lot of shots, but I mean, it was an action fight. I don't know. I mean, it's so funny. Like, I'll just say this quickly and then toss back to one of you guys. But coming in, like, my prediction was this is going to be an action fight, meaning both guys are going to get hit. Spence is going to land some very heavy shots. And, you know, if the stars align, I think Spence could even stop him. And, like, that's pretty much what played out. You know, he didn't quite stop him, but he had him very heavily hurt at the fight. It was an action fight, but just seeing it play out in practice, you know, still, like, I mean, that's why you fight the fights. I mean, it was so exciting to see it play out. I mean, I think Fred said he wasn't that surprised because it played out the way that he expected it to, but, you know, and I can sort of say that if I remove emotions from it, but just seeing it play out, it's still like we saw Spence get hit with shots. We've never seen him have the take before. We saw him, you know, dish out an amount of punishment we haven't seen him dish out before. I mean, no fighters have ever been able to take this from him before. I mean, the Mikey Garcia fight was a completely different style, so that doesn't really count. Yeah, I guess that's what I have to say about it. I mean, Spence is as good as I thought. Porter was able to hang in there, probably a little better than I thought, but then just, you know, seeing it actually play out was the really interesting thing.
What about you, Fred?
No, I said Spence is the truth. And like I said last week, he does everything Sean Porter can do, but he does it better. You know, and it was a great fight, but for me, it's not. Like I said, like I know what Spence is. I knew Spence was going to be the king like years and years and years ago. You first see him when he was a young guy, and he's jabbing to the body. Right there, you go. This dude's smart. You know, he's a dog, and now he shows that he can box. He can mix it up. Like he's got everything.
He's got a hell of a chin. He's got a hell of a motor. I mean, so yeah. I think. We can even take turns doing this for probably the next 10 minutes. But, like, these guys deserve a ton of credit, and I'm not seeing it being given. Like, first and foremost, okay, the motor on these two guys, they fought a high-paced, like, elite-level fight for 12 rounds. They fought at a blistering pace. There was hardly any slowdown. Even the moments where they weren't hitting each other, there was still a ton going on. Porter was feigning like crazy. Spence bouncing in and out. I mean, how they were able to go like that for 12 rounds, that part enough is insane for just on that alone. But then you add in the fact that both guys made a complete and concerted effort to have a body attack. And it was clearly more with Spence. I mean, that is his gimmick, basically, that he's a body puncher. But if you look at the punches that they landed to the body on each other, and more so for Spence landing on Porter than Porter landing on Spence, it is astonishing to me that Porter did not slow down at all in that fight. Like, I'm sitting ringside, okay? You know, on TV, I don't know that it came off this way, but I'm watching Porter lunge in with a hook. The hook misses the mark, and Spence counters with hooks to the body. You rarely see fighters do that. I mean, one clear instance where you could recall that happening and you'll be able to find gifs of it is when Crawford stopped in Dongo. See, I am a Crawford fanboy. I just found a way to sneak him in, and you guys can't tell me nothing because it actually is appropriate to the conversation. That was a counter. Like, he countered him on the way in. Spence did that for 12 rounds on Porter. Just vicious shots to the body. You could hear thudding. I mean, I don't know what Porter's made out of, but how he took that punishment for 12 rounds, and he got punished for 12 rounds to the body. The shots Spence was landing upstairs. I mean, the only explanation you could maybe come up with is that Spence isn't as big of a puncher as people realize. I don't believe that that's the case, just based off of how Porter folded in the 11th round. But my God, these guys deserve a ton of credit for the fight that they put on. And like, I didn't. My opinion of Spence doesn't change. If anything, I think he's a little better than I thought. I thought that there would be signs of struggle in this fight, and I didn't really see signs of struggle. I saw signs of him being matched by an equally, not equally good, because at the end of the day, Porter just wasn't as good as Spence, but damn, it's close. My opinion of Porter has actually changed. I think he is a fighter that you can point to and say he's like actually gotten better before our eyes. You know, there's tons of fighters, and Fred, Tom, you guys are older than me. You guys have watched boxing longer than me, probably. In the history of watching boxing for me, I can't think of many fighters who I see at the world title level. And from the time that they join or they enter the world title level up until the time where they lose their title and they fade into obscurity, Robert Guerrero style, I can't think of many fighters that have actually improved. You know, if we look at boxing right now, like who sticks out immediately as somebody who's gotten better once they got a world title? Canelo comes to mind. And now it's Sean Porter. Like that was Sean Porter's putting it all together, and he's peaking at the right time because he gains a lot from this fight, even though he lost. And like, he's due for some big paydays now going forward because he looks like he is an elite fighter. Am I off base in saying that about Porter, guys?
I don't actually think so. And I usually like to goof on Porter a lot, but
Let's do this then.
I think Porter fought his best fight, and I think he got really he brought everything he had to this fight. But he has gotten better, because if you remember the Brook fight, like it looked like he was running into a wall when Brook was just throwing simple jabs, and he looked confused. You know, like I said, I think last week he looked like a dog hearing a strange sound. But so So Porter has gotten better, but you know, not good enough to win. So, no, but they came. I think there's a really great moment. I think it was the third round where they kept turning. You know, they kept changing their angles around and around each other, but they're throwing punches. That was a really impressive moment there. So, you know, So that's where you saw these two guys shine. And you can't really, there's no way to be disappointed with this fight. You know, there really isn't.
So you actually agreed with me, but you just wanted to at least give off the guys that you do not like Sean Porter. Is that what I'm hearing?
A bit, because, like I said, I don't want to...
You don't like guys that smile?
No, I don't want to trash the fight. But Sean Porter's also a bit of Tim Bradley 2.0. He throws a lot of punches that are not effective, but they look like they're really doing something.
Fred, you better watch yourself here.
Yeah, because Tom thinks Tim Bradley's a Hall of Fame fighter. You're going to hurt him cry and hurt his feelings.
I actually kind of want to shit on Porter a little bit. Can I?
Go right ahead, Tom.
Oh, let's see it, because you guys are about to be made to look stupid. So let's go.
So I'm a little bit frustrated about Porter still. I think he's benefiting a lot from exceeding expectations. Like, let's not get
100% I agree
crazy.
With that.
I mean, I scored the fight in the end pretty wide for Spence. I know you did on Reddit, and a lot of people were upset for whatever reason. I mean, this was a fight to me. I think all three of us agree, unfortunately, there isn't really a clear dissenter here, where it was like it was competitive and there was action. Spence did actually, you know, Spence did get hit. There were a lot of, you know, clean punch connects on Spence, but it just always felt like Spence was, you know, on a macro sense, winning the battle. And also, I could just consistently had him edging the rounds. You know, I can look at it. I don't even know what I missed there, but
that's okay. Well, we'll explain to you later, Dom.
Sure, but he kept taking those rounds like they were close, but you know, and Porter was doing stuff, and you would say, okay, Porter landed a hard shot, but consistently, I mean, like there was one round when Porter landed a good shot and they made a really big deal about it on the broadcast, like Porter landed a shot to the temple. But to me, Spence landed two shots even harder than that that completely spun Porter's head around that round, you know, and it just seemed like I didn't get to rewatch the whole thing. I rewatched something like the first four or five rounds. I didn't have that much free time today before the podcast, but just, I mean, my God, the bomb Spence landed. So, yeah, I just a quick note about the scoring, and then I'll go back to you. Like, the people who did seem to score it for Porter, and there weren't that many, but there were a fair amount of, like, I'll just say boxing writers, seemed to separate from fans, who said, like, this was a coin flip fight, could have gone either way, I wouldn't have minded, you know, a close Porter win or a draw, and, you know, the knockdown was the difference. I really didn't score it that way, and I think that is just, again, a lot of, like, exceeding expectations, you know, just sort of, like, scoring fights the way they aren't supposed to be scored with, you know, a combination of, like, exceeding expectation and the thing of, like, well, they were fighting Porter's fight, so therefore Porter was winning the rounds, and it's like, yeah, but I think Spence was fighting that way because he wanted to, and I consistently had him, you know, it's like noting that it was a Sean Porter type of fight, I still had Spence winning most of the rounds. You know, but I'm not really super upset it was a split decision because there were plenty of people online who saw it that way. So it seems like, you know, you have three judges. It's certainly valid. I mean, there was, you know, it seems like just about right that it was a split decision because there definitely were a lot of people out there who seemed to see it that way and edge things more for Porter. But like I said, I think when you kind of remove that, I mean, Spence to me really did distinguish himself as the better fighter.
Well, let me tell you something. Coming into this fight, and into every fight, one of the most important things about how you perceive a fight is, as Tom pointed out accurately, expectation. If you think about life, this is how life works. When you expect to get a raise and you wind up being fired, it hurts a lot more than if it was just randomly. You just got let go, okay? That's how life works. Expectations, in boxing, they color your view. It's why I hate to make predictions. It's why I hate to have that conversation of who I think is going to win the fight. Because then I start to pull for that result because I want to be right. And like at the end of the day, that's what we all want. That's why we have this podcast. So we can tell people how right we are and how wrong other people were about things. I mean, that's all sports media, okay? But here's the thing. Heading into this fight, my expectation was that Sean Porter was going to be competitive. That this was not an easy fight for Spence. Because I know that Spence fights flat-footed, and I know Porter was going to take advantage of it. And the question for me was, when Porter lunges in with shots, is Spence going to be able to make room to land clear punches? Otherwise, it's going to wind up like all of Sean Porter's other fights, which is that they're really close. And I didn't see it as really close. I'm sitting there, and what I saw was Sean Porter come in with shots. He lands one or two, but most of them hit the arms. Most of them hit everything but the face. And Spence is countering clean to the body, landing straight left hands. And I'm thinking to myself, well, Sean Porter is definitely pushing the pace here, but he's losing the exchanges. And that's expectation right there. And about the scoring specifically, here's the thing. To talk about the scoring is a complete disservice to the fight. And this is Golovkin and Canelo all over again. Canelo and Golovkin put on a hell of a fight twice. Twice we got amazing middleweight fights featuring two of the top pound-for-pound fighters in the sport. Twice. And both times, the conversation coming out of that fight was not about how interesting it was not about how these guys are two of the best fighters in the world. It was not about the chin. It's not about any of that. It's people complaining about the scores. Give it a rest. This is why boxing is in the position it is. You know why you get so excited when you're watching Sunday Night Football, Cowboys playing the Saints, and Dazen has a 30-second commercial showcasing Joshua and Ruiz, the rematch, showcasing Canelo, showcasing Gennady Golovkin. Do you know why that's so exciting? It's because you're not used to seeing it. And you know why? It's because for so long, boxing has shot itself in the foot. When you got people who would rather complain about the only thing that they're actually qualified to talk about, which is scoring and officiating. You don't hear people talking about what actually happens in the ring. It's like that with all the other sports. You think the people talk more about how the referees blew a call than how the Rams defense and or offense or the Saints offense and defense led to that win in the NFC Championship game. Simple as that. But people want to talk about the scoring and the officiating and all this stuff. Give it a rest. That's the kind of stuff that makes people tune out. Talk about the game. Because at the end of the day, what are we here for? Are we here to be enjoyed? Are we here to be entertained? Or are you here to be right about how you saw a fight go? Who cares about the scoring? Did the right guy win? Was Larry Hazard's score bizarre? Yeah. But did the right guy win? Yeah. He did. So I don't want to hear about that. Enjoy the fight. Let's actually talk about the fight because it was one for the ages. Sean Porter went from being the guy who couldn't beat Yordanis Ugas clearly to now being a guy that you would want to see him fight Terrence Crawford, Errol Spence again, rematch with Danny Garcia. Sean Porter's got the world at his fingertips. But we want to sit here and talk about some scorecards? Come on now. What do you guys want to talk about? You want to talk about the scorecards? Go ahead.
No, I don't care at all. Like I said, we talked about that before. I don't agree with it, but it's not like, oh, I'm going to sit here. I didn't give it 2 seconds of thought, you know?
Here's the thing.
Spence won, so who cares?
If Spence had won an 8-4 card, which is plausible, okay? If Spence would have won an 8-4 card on all three judges' scorecards, do you know what I would be saying today? I would say Spence absolutely won, for sure, and the card's completely fine. But the one thing that people need to know in boxing history is that Errol Spence had a clear win over Sean Porter, but those cards did not tell the tale of the fight. Because if you watch that fight, it wasn't just that Spence won 8-4. It was that Spence walked through hell to win that fight.
Yeah, and that's a big thing when we talk about people that care too much about records, because that's what it all comes down to. They forget what the actual fights were. They never saw them. You know, they just want to look at, okay, who did he fight? What's his resume? What's this? What's that? You know, and especially when you have like lower quality, like lower guys with losses, and people like to write them off. It's like, I don't know. Like, look at Jose Cito Lopez. You know, people go, he's got 8 losses. Well, he sucks. No, but he's having his little second win. You know, he's not going to compete with the top guys, even though he almost caught, you know, Thurman. But he's going to have his moments. And so that's it. If you just look at his guys' records and everything, you don't get it. So I think, so I'm split on this whole thing where I know a lot of people seem, especially like even the commentators seem hugely surprised at Porter. And it's like, well, no, I've watched Porter. I knew he was going to be competitive, but I knew Spence was going to win. You know, so I'm not that shocked or surprised or anything because that's Sean Porter. Like, he comes to fight. He doesn't lay down.
Absolutely not. And, I mean, it's just the expectation that you have going into the fight.
And sorry to cut you off, but this ties into like this whole thing we said. This is why Fox is different from ESPN and DAZN, especially because they've changed this attitude to boxing. You know, they're saying, no, we're excited by boxing. We're not going to sit here and whine and cry about fights that's supposed to be made, or, you know, we're not getting this guy or that guy. You know, they're just going out making fights and they're making box matches. They're like, hey, this is great, you know. This is a sport you should actually enjoy and not sit around piss and moan, you know. So that's why I like Fox. That's why I like the goofiness of Ray Mancini and everything, because that's what they're saying. Hey, let's have fun with this, you know.
Ray Mancini is increasingly making me laugh with some of his takes. I don't know if it's a good thing or bad thing, but I do find myself laughing more at him. And I did not know. I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. Tom,
I don't know. I like Ray. I don't need to qualify that at all. I said my piece about the scoring, and I think what I said was fair. I don't know. I didn't mean to dwell on it. I just like, yeah, I addressed it. I think the scores were good. And like I was saying, even though I scored it reasonably wide for Spence, I certainly don't have a problem with the split decision. I think you had a good point saying, like, when you look back at the record book, you know, that sort of feels like a reasonable outcome. Yeah, like Spence had to walk through fire to get it. You know, it's like, okay, shows up as a split decision. That feels about right.
So one point about expectation, Fred is going to love this. Do you guys remember when Floyd fought Miguel Cotto? Floyd clearly won that fight. Like, it's not even up for debate, okay? Like, if you watch it knowing, you know, if you look at the result, you know the results already, blah, blah, blah. And Floyd, like, damn near stopped Cotto in the 12th round. Now, that's not a typical Floyd 12th round, but the point I'm making is that the expectation was that Miguel Cotto was just going to fall victim to Floyd the way everyone else does. But Miguel Cotto had two rounds of pretty good success against Floyd, bloodied Floyd's nose, behind his jab, really just had a lot of success for a couple of rounds. But the fight went back into its lull. But like when I was watching that with a bunch of people, and people thought that Cotto won that fight afterwards, which was bizarre to me. But it made sense because the expectation was Cotto wasn't going to be able to have any sort of success against Floyd. He had a little bit, and people just went, you know, their habitual line stepper as we've they, like you give him a rope and they want to be a cowboy.
Yeah.
Anyway. Let's talk about Sean Porter and what's next. And I may not have responded to some of the criticism you guys had of Sean Porter. So if you want to repeat it so I can go after you guys, do it, please. But like, what do you guys think is next for Sean Porter? What do you think, Tom, if you were booking him next?
I really don't have a clever answer about that. I mean,
I do. But
I'm going to not answer the question like I typically, you know, typical Tom Cody here. But I think it. Want to see what Fox wants to do with their schedule and what Showtime wants to do with their schedule next year, because it's sort of like, what's his slot? Like, can he really be a pay-per-view B-side? Is he going to headline like a Fox show? Like, I think like Sean Porter against Jose Cito Lopez would be like a fantastic like Fox fight night. That's the one thing I kind of worry about now that Fox is doing these pay-per-views. I'm worried a little bit that people will kind of sit out and wait for a slot. You know, on one of the paper, like, is Porter going to find it, try to figure out a way to get back on pay-per-view, or is he going to take a different fight? Anyway, but one of you guys.
I think he'll go back into the mix. Probably Jose Lopez or step down like that, sort of a recovery fight, because he's going to have that push behind him now. You know, and I think they've got a lot of bodies there at 147 to put him up against.
Yeah, can you imagine like a Lipinets fight, how good that would be?
Lipinets would get murked.
Yeah, it would be an action fight.
It would definitely be an action and fight.
I think he would get murked. I think Lipinets is, I think he has more to offer than that. Anyway, go on.
Lipinets, the guy that got dropped by Mikey Garcia at 140, moving up to 147, just because you beat up on Lamont Peterson, who was on his last leg in the sport, does not mean that you're going to walk up and be able to be competitive with Sean Porter, who's like a bona fide elite welterweight.
Sean Porter got dropped by Adrian Broner.
Yeah, I don't.
Adrian Broner is a
little bit of a. Look, we covered
don't
this
you
before.
Dare,
all
don't
of
you dare
Porter's
take
fights
Adrian
against
Broner's
top
name
guys
vain.
Have been competitive. You know, very slight competitive wins or very slight competitive losses. Spence is the you know, brought him the widest out of that. But it's like, you know. Porter got lit up by Eric Bonet at times, you know, it's like,
that's what Porter does.
Well, that's what I mean. I think it's I'll say this and then I'll throw it back to you. But Spence is a guy, like, there are certain fighters who can dominate lower level fighters. Like Spence fought Bundu, who fought Thurman. Thurman had an ugly 12 round fight with him. Spence sent him to hell in front of 6 million viewers. You know, Porter is a guy who, whether he's fighting lower level fighters, he'll kind of fight down to the level of competition. But what we've seen here is, you know, we saw him, you know, match the level, but not quite to Keith Thurman, similar with Danny Garcia. He got the nod in that fight. And then here against Spence, you know, is able to give him hell, but not quite get the nod. I mean, for whatever reason, he can't fully distinguish. I think even a guy like Lipinets is a 12 round difficult fight for Porter. I just don't, he's the type of fighter who's never in an easy fight. But anyway, back to you.
Well, I saw something really weird on the PBC Twitter. Really weird to me. I saw Kell Brook.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Selling the fight. And it leads me to believe that Kell Brook, who's recently also released some videos about him being training in the ring, that Kell Brook may be looking to get back into the mix.
Well, and said he was a free agent.
I think Sean Porter's got some unfinished business with him, don't you think? And if Sean Porter could go fight Kell Brook and get him out of there quicker than Spence did, and knowing that Sean Porter went 12 rounds with Spence and had one hell of a fight, I think we may have a rematch on our hands, guys. What do you think? If Sean Porter comes back, blasts away Kell Brook, we may have a fight? I don't know. What do you guys? How do you guys feel about that one? And I'll tell you why it's not going to work unless you guys want to get there, but I want to know what you guys got to think about that idea.
Well, it's possible for a fight. I don't think it'll lead to a rematch. I don't think you're going to see Spence rematch anyone unless he loses. He's got way too many options.
What do you think, Tom?
I think I'm going to definitely go the opposite of that. I mean, I think Spence and Porter will fight each other again at some point in their careers. Might be at 154 two or three years from now, but I just think that that will happen. Like we're seeing, you know, it's different divisions, different circumstances, but seeing Wilder and Ortiz fight each other again, I just still feel like there's juice there, you know, coming out of that fight, especially this fight, especially if it does end up being, you know, a lot of fights have been considered fight of the year this year. You know, this has been a long year. I mean, Joshua Ruiz is another fight people are calling. You know, I mean, look, we got a lot of schedule left. There could be another, you know, who knows how Canelo Kovalev is going to play out, you know. I'm only slightly joking when I say that. But, look, something I loved after the fight, like, I really started to get it. We said last week, like, I was looking forward to this fight because of how it looked on paper as far as an action fight. But in the week leading up to it, I mean, Kenny was just, like, such a pain in the ass. Like, the Porters were really kind of, like, making themselves heels. Like, I was really getting into, like, the Carney side of things. And I love that even in the post-fight presser, they were going at each other. Like, I'm borrowing a phrase from Conor McGregor. Like, there's no peace there. I like that there's still some heat between them. Like, I really did feel that there was a bit of animosity. I don't think Spence, who's really not the best on the mic, liked that Porter was talking so much. I think there's going to be juice for a rematch eventually. It does depend, you know. If Porter fights Josecito Lopez, and that looks like the Ugas fight, you know, Porter will have again burned the goodwill he built up from this fight. Like, he's, you know, had a lot of goodwill coming out of the Thurman fight, had a lot of goodwill coming out of the Garcia fight, and he always finds a way to sort of, you know, throw a little water on the, you know. So, he's been up and down.
So
and,
I actually, you know, hopefully know who Porter's going to fight going. Next.
I'd love to hear it.
This is breaking news, guys. I was at the fight last night. I'll tell you who Porter's fighting next. He's rematching Usyk.
I like it.
It'll Usyk be a tougher fight than whoever he's fighting next. I'll tell you that much. Talking about Usyk. And I'm not even trying to diss on Usyk. That's my boy. I love Usyk. So here's the thing. The Brook fight, wouldn't necessarily work. Like, if Brook was going to sign a deal with PBC, you damn well know that he's not going to jump straight into a big fight with Sean Porter. We've seen already that they like to be methodical with how they bring guys in, and they would give him an introduction fight at least before feeding him to Porter. But I think Lopez is a pretty good fight for him. If they wanted to just have him do a tune-up before he gets back into one of the top guys. Although I do think it's more likely that Josecito Lopez fights Robert Guerrero next, but we can get to that in a bit. And by get to that, I mean just like really short, guys. But I think Porter's got the world at his fingertips here. I wouldn't be shocked if he had the rematch with Ugas. Wouldn't be shocked if he fought Lipinitz, as you suggested, Tom. I think both of those are fine fights for him. And I also wouldn't be shocked if by some miraculous stretch he fights Manny Pacquiao next. I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen. But, you know, Sean Porter's stock has definitely risen. Like, would Top Rank, would it be worth it for Top Rank to offer up a few million dollars to get Porter to possibly jump over and fight Crawford? I mean, how ridiculous would it be if Porter jumped over for, I don't know, $6-7 million and beat Crawford? That would be insane.
There are a thousand reasons that won't happen. Very quick thing, just jumping in.
Probably a thousand is putting it, selling it short. But anyway, go on.
Yeah. I was just checking online, and the Spence knockout punch, or knockdown punch, already has over a million views just from one upload. So, you know, just talking about how big of an impact this fight mean and the value of having like a signature punch like that. And just related to that, the fight was the number one trend on Twitter through Sunday morning. Like I checked before I went to bed and it was number one. And I checked again when I woke up and it was still number one. So, yeah, I know that's not related to what we were talking about, but this fight definitely had an impact, you know, so, talking about the importance of having like a fight of the year candidate type fight. I mean, that definitely does matter, you know, how good of a fight it was, what kind of outcome you get out of it. It's not just the promotion and the matchmaking.
Well, did it get more tweets on Twitter than the Masked Singer? Anyway, Fox definitely is really big into number one trends, you know, with Spence and also WWE, who regularly is number one on the Twitter charts. Let's talk about, so there was, the attendance was 16,702, which places it close to the top in terms of like crowds that have been at Staples Center, with the most being around like 18,000 or so. I've seen one that was 20, but like I haven't been able to like double check that with like another source. So the ones that most regularly seem to be reliable are like 18,000 something. So 2,000 short of being like one of the most successful events ever at the Staples Center. But this did do better than Santa Cruz's fights at the Staples Center. It did better than Mikey Garcia's fights. And you had two guys who are not from the area. So were you guys surprised by the turnout? Fred, we'll start with you.
Yeah, actually it was, because when it was announced, I thought it was kind of a weird location because of, you know, neither guy had a connection to the place. But then when I was looking, like even over a week ago with ticket sales, and they were like really solid, you know, so I was surprised at how good it was. But now we know it's because Bobby Brown, you know, it's because Porter has all those connections to 90s R&B singers. Brought the heat in.
See, Spence had all the young rappers tweeting and making Instagram posts about him. And
Bobby Brown,
baby. Sean Porter, you know, had reunited New Edition for the fight.
Yeah. Key Sweat, you know, that was bringing in the noise. So I was surprised.
Shout out Key Sweat.
Just how strong the reception was. But then again, this is sort of the thing where, how do we say, people sort of forget that black people have money that they can spend on fights, you know, even though Floyd proved it for so many years. So I think this really, and you were there, you said yourself, you're there in the crowd, and it wasn't like everyone always wants to, like they wanted to credit the first Spence fight with Mikey Garcia bringing in all the audience, you know. They said, no, it's all the Mexican fans and everything. That's what really sold it. And they're like wanted to discount Spence's attraction. But I think Errol Spence is really, he's hit that level where he's a draw now.
Yeah.
I think the fight showed it.
What about you, Tom?
What was the question?
Turnout for the 16,000.
Oh, just the response. Right. Yeah. Sorry. We went in a little bit in a different direction. Yeah.
Tom was looking up, what is a New Edition?
No, yeah. I actually was. I was just looking at Mayweather-McGregor, which I believe was the number two gate of all time, only had 14,623. So just again, emphasizing like the number of the, you know, it's like you guys know this, but just emphasizing this to the audience, like the total number of the attendances sort of becomes less important than like the gate number, because it's like, okay, they could have, you know, price the tickets like a Jose Ramirez fight for like $25 and a t-shirt, you know, and you get like a ticket and a free t-shirt, like, and they could probably have sold the place out, you know. It's like, I think the more significant thing is that it looks like it did a very strong gate. Like, I know Fred was doing some searches about that before the fight came on, and we'll find that out because it was a California fight. But yeah, I mean, overall, it says a lot. Look, yeah, I mean, I've been on the front lines of Spence fights for years. I've you know, gone to something like five of his fights, and he's always drawn a great crowd at the Barclays Center. And the numbers just went up. Like, he fought Algieri, fought Bundu, fought Lamont Peterson there. And, you know, it was like, even when he fought Lamont Peterson, that was like, I think 13,000 something tickets. And that was a great audience. And, you know, they were there for him. I mean, it was so bizarre going into this fight that there were so many people you know, it's like, we don't have the gate numbers officially yet. We don't have the pay-per-view numbers yet, but I think the indicators are this did really well. And, you know, it's like people online saying like, this won't sell 100,000 buys, like certain notorious figures that we always make fun of. Like,
no, call him out by name.
No, I'm not going to, I mean, it's just not productive, but, it's yeah.
The boxing,
I mean,
voice would have.
Spence has done good ratings. He's done good ticket sales. There's really no reason to think that he was the, you know, Mikey Garcia was the primary draw in that event. You know, it's like Spence has done great on his own. Yeah, I mean, it's like Spence's star power just keeps growing.
Well,
yeah. Oh, sorry to cut you off, but yeah, just perspective. Like, the floor seats were $1,000. So it usually the gates all depends on how the higher mix numbers go. But just like UFC 241, which had Daniel Cormier and the return of Nate Diaz, they
wow,
did
that's
17.
A big deal.
Well, no, but you know, that is, as you know,
because he's from LA or California or something.
Yeah, yeah, Stockton and everything. So he's a California guy. And even though Cormier isn't from there, he lives in San Jose and everything. But they did 17,300 for total attendance at a lower price number. And that's the UFC, which is a big
in a
push.
Richer area.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, out in Anaheim. So yeah, this is a pretty huge gate for two dudes with no real connection to the state. You know, it really is.
Well, I think, you can't listen to boxing media too much. I mean, most of these writers who want to bloviate about the ticket sales and who's popular and who's not, they're old white guys. How do they know? Yeah. Come on now. Everyone want to talk about nobody knows who Gervonta Davis is? Like, okay, but Gervonta Davis does numbers.
Yeah.
Dude sold out the StubHub Center here in LA. Emmanuel Navarrete couldn't sell more than 3,000 tickets here in LA. And he's Mexican. So how many tickets did Vasily Lomachenko sell here in LA? 5,000. Gervonta Davis sold more than that, you know? And he's so, like, I'm not trying to say Gervonta Davis is better than these guys. Don't get it twisted. What I'm trying to say is that maybe the voices that we're hearing of people who want to speculate on how popular fighters are, they ain't the ones you should be listening to, because they seem to only see their bubble that they're in. And if the people in their bubble don't like it, well then, fair enough. They must not be popular. Well, that's not the case. You know, people spent years trying to say that Floyd wasn't a draw. That it was his opponents who somehow, there was a threat of him losing or whatever. I don't know. What this does say is that Sean Porter and Errol Spence, with no connection to LA, everyone said, you know, the 40-something thousand people that were at Spence Garcia, that they were all there for Garcia. Well, seems like that may not be the case. That maybe, and let me tell you something, Dallas showed up for the fight. There were a ton of people from Dallas. They all traveled out. You know, maybe Spence is building a loyal following that are going to go where he goes. And everywhere he goes, he's going to add more. And that he actually is turning into a star. And let's not underestimate that. I mean, I'm looking at the wrestling subreddit today, and these guys are like acting like us about how Fox is promoting WWE. They're blown away by it. And wrestling is far more not lucrative in terms of the wrestling. You know, John Cena isn't getting paid Floyd checks, but Vince McMahon is. But even they're like, hey, you know, we have a deal with NBC Universal, but still what Fox is doing is incredible. Maybe that's working. Maybe that's working. Maybe Spence is turning into a legitimate star in boxing, and maybe it's not worth listening to those people who want to say otherwise, because maybe they're not the best people to look for answers.
Yeah, no, like I said, Fox is really tapped into something, and it mostly what I get from it, as I said before, it's because they go, hey, boxing's a great sport and you should be rewarded for watching it. And that's what people want. You know, like we've talked about before, like Jim Lampley had a show on HBO. All he did was piss on Floyd Mayweather, you know, and Al Heyman, and even Max on boxing. He has this platform, and what's he doing? He's pissing on Al Heyman again. You know, they piss and moan, like ESPN's always crying about this or that. You know, it just, no, stop it.
Well,
people want to enjoy boxing, you know, and they don't care.
And that's why I shut down the conversation about scoring earlier, because ultimately the right guy won. If Porter would have won like 9-3 on all three cards, okay, we might have to say something about that. But that wasn't the case, and it was a competitive fight, so the scoring is the scoring. I think it's all right. The draw on the Golovkin-Canelo fight, all right, whatever. You know, you may feel one way or the other, but it was one hell of a fight. But here's the thing. Too often we get caught up in the criticism of the sport.
Yeah,
of the definitely. Combatants, of the networks, rather than celebrating it. And if you are going to be a dark cloud all the time, well, then it makes sense that people will tune out over time. And that's what's happened. The sport, sure, it got put behind a paywall and it stood there for years and years and years. Okay, that has its own impact. But then when you add on to that, that whenever people want to talk about boxing, there's always someone that's got to be critical about something. Well, it's no secret why at the end of the day, boxing wound up being, you know, the seventh most popular sport in America. Give me a break. You know where boxing is right now? Do you guys want to know? Are you guys, is anybody out there actually looking at the numbers?
I don't know where you're going with this.
Do you know boxing is beating college football? Not the big college football games, but these fights that we're seeing on Fox, they're doing better numbers than some of the college football games. You know, boxing is beating the NHL in ratings. Do you know it's beating a lot of MLB games? I'm talking about the Fox cards. The ESPN ain't doing their job. They could.
Yeah, but yeah, it's really cool. It's been exciting to follow this. I mean, I'll jump in for a second and just, you know, sort of put you over. I think, like, going back when the PBC, like, launched, like, boxing writers were shitting on the ratings, finding out reasons to just arbitrarily poke holes in things. And, like, you know, that was one of the things when I was getting into Sunday Puncher and we were, like, going back to when we had the Slack and just, you know, really looking at the ratings in context and seeing even, like, the FS1 cards would be, like, the highest rated stuff on FS1, you know, drawing people to that channel and, like, how relatively well the PBC cards were doing when they would air in primetime. And, like, you know, it's like, still, you have boxing writers shitting on it. It's like, yeah, it's like those cards were drawing. They were proving that there was a demand, and it's paving the way for the Fox deal. And again, it's like the Fox deal, all indications are, it's like we're not in the boardroom, but it's like, look at how much support they're putting behind it. Every indication is it's doing great. So it's, you know, fantastic news.
Look, so this, you couple a couple of things here. So one, the fight got a tremendous amount of social media buzz, whether it be because of the viral clip of Spence dropping Porter, or just a lot of people were talking about it because they were watching it. Add on to the fact that it's Fox tweeting about it and they're retweeting from all their various accounts with hundreds of thousands to millions of followers. Combine that, okay? Combine that if you turn on FS1 and you were expecting to see college football, you're seeing the post-fight show and you're seeing the highlights from the fight, which is pretty refreshing to see, because there's a lot of times where after fights, like, they wouldn't want to show highlights of it. But you add all that stuff in, okay? And so, clearly boxing, there's a lot of hype right now. People are excited. It's the day after the fight, similar to after Wilder Fury. Well, everyone benefits from this, because you go and you're watching Sunday Night Football, and you've heard about boxing, even if you didn't have a conversation about it. It's like, it's whether it was conscious or not, boxing is somewhere lingering in your brain. And then you see this commercial that they did during Sunday Night Football for DAZN. And you see that, and it's like, oh, more boxing. And more the sport emerges from the shadows to being an actual respected sport that is standing alongside the NFL, the NBA, MLB. I might have said NBA twice, but it's worth it because that's my favorite sport. College football, etc. It's like there's an agreement building amongst all sports fans that like you got to pay attention to boxing, and it right now I think Fox has done better numbers this year than the UFC's done on ESPN. Fred, you might have to check me on that because I don't know for sure.
I think it is now, yeah. But people, Fox is slightly bigger because, you know, they're on the broadcast.
Sure, but ESPN got 70-something million subscribers, and all of those, are, most of those people are, like, sports fans. You know, you wouldn't sign up for the sports package if you weren't interested in watching sports.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, ESPN started out good with the UFC, but then it started to reflect the same decline that they had under Fox. So, yeah, definitely, this is what you see with Fox. This is it. They're wrapping all their sports together. And, like, Showtime, yeah, they are owned by CBS, but CBS is, they're going to protect their football from everyone else. Like, if you want to get on CBS, like, even the shows they show on CBS, everyone's jockeying for those slots. You know, with Fox, you might, I think, you know, coming into this next year, you might start to see, well, is the WWE going to play friendly, or are they going to start wanting to say, hey, you know, we want this slot, you know, so there could be combat. But right now it's like, yeah, Fox is running everything, and there's no barriers on their sports thing. So they're like, we're eating the cost, and this is what benefited them putting on the pay-per-view, because this is pretty much they're using their own advertising time on their own channels for their own sports that they're already paying for. So they got these slots paid for already. And they're like, well, this is what we're going to push, because they get a back end deal on these, you know, pay-per-views now. You know, they got a piece of the pie. And this is what's so tough to go, because they were paying $200 million for UFC just to show the preliminary fights. And, you know, like a couple, four, I think they were showing a year cards on main Fox, but they didn't get a say in who was fighting. They got nothing to do with pay-per-view.
Let me repeat UFC, what you said, because you kind of like just went quick. So Fox was paying $200 million a year.
Yeah.
For pay-per-view prelims.
Yeah, it started out at like 160, but they had elevator steps every year. So the last years, they were paying $200 million for the preliminary fights.
And for cards just for them.
Yeah, and they did four fights. I think it was at the end on main Fox. I don't even know if they were doing that many some years, but that's what their option was.
And they weren't involved in pay-per-view.
No, they didn't. They only could get the fighters that UFC would give them, and UFC kept all their toys with their pay-per-view, you know. So all their
naturally,
top fighters.
I mean, that was
there.
Smart.
Yeah,
not
yeah,
smart
yeah.
For but, Fox, but smart for the UFC.
No, so yeah, now so with PBC, they're supposedly paying $60 million a year, and there's no fighter that's off limit, as you can see, where they got Deontay Wilder, you know, was associated, but he was associated with Showtime and everything. And so you're talking, it's $140 million less a year, and they get a slice of the pay-per-view, and they get to choose who's going to be on the pay-per-view. You know, they get to cut these deals, or they're getting in on it. So this is why there's such a huge push right now. You know, it might slow down eventually, like once, if any of the numbers people get in there and they start bitching. But as far as their earnings, it's like they name the UFC only as a cost savings compared to everything else. You know, their advertising normally is up, you know.
What are you referring to? I think you need to provide some context.
Oh, sorry. Fox is like now that Disney bought their 20th Century Fox. So now the Fox network is essentially Fox News and Fox Sports. So when they reported earnings, they were talking about their advertising revenue on their channels. And they'll make comments about why it's down. It was down because they didn't have the World Cup and politics, the political ads from last year. But when they mentioned it wasn't because of the UFC, you know, they say, no, we are doing better because we don't have these offset costs of the UFC. So that's why they're so huge on boxing, because it really is cheap for them. And they're pushing these guys, because I know there's some people I saw, especially UK people who aren't really familiar with the TV deals, who said, why is Fox doing all these pay-per-views? Because, you know, they're doing four. It's because there really isn't much downside. As you see from the guaranteed purses between Spence and Porter, they're only taking $2 million each. So that means they got a lot of back end, you know. And I think that's really, and also because the promoter's Tom Brown, so he's probably more on that thing where they pay him an amount you know, to be the promoter for the event and to handle the, you know, the logistics and everything. But he's not like a Bob Arum. He's not taking, you know, 30% of the cut from these guys or anything. So it, they've got, they don't have to, the Fighters don't have to take a big loan, you know, to, for the, to make their guaranteed salaries or anything. And for Fox, it's like, okay, yeah, we, everything else is bonus. It's like, it's a really beneficial situation. It's really hard to compete against for like other people. You know, Wilder, you know, like I say, when it comes to Wilder, I don't know, that that might be their first dud, but I don't think it's going to slow down their momentum.
Well, we, that, that's, I don't know. We'll get into that in a little bit. But they've shown a tremendous commitment, because specifically to Spence, but in general to the sport of boxing. And like it, we saw today, it's been confirmed that Spence's next fight is going to be on pay-per-view in January against Danny Garcia. And not only is he going to fight Danny Garcia in January, the importance of that is that they're going to put this fight on a week before the Super Bowl. And the Super Bowl will be on Fox this year. So you're going to have all this hype on Fox. You're going to have the NFL, the, you know, the playoffs on Fox. And so do you think it's the right move to immediately announce Spence's fight after literally less than 24 hours after he beats Porter, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough physical fight. That's the only real thing where I'm like, maybe you should let him recover for a few weeks before he has to get back in training camp. But yeah, I mean, there's enough time. I think it's interesting for a few reasons. I mean, I think one, Fox just wants to keep the momentum going. I think it is interesting, again, like coming out of the you know, the Wilder fight, they waited a long time to announce it. They waited until this pay-per-view. So this instead, you know, they get the super long lead time, which is interesting. Actually, the Spence Garcia fight was announced super far in advance. You know, they announced that in November for a March fight date. So that, that part of it is interesting. I mean, I think they just wanted to keep the goodwill going. I mean, there was some confusion. Like, Spence didn't seem to know if the fight was going to get announced. Like, there were different things people were saying around. I mean, I think it was, you know, I think that part of it is interesting, that it kind of seemed to be an audible, that I sort of wonder, like, we've heard that about the PBC before, that fights will get signed behind the scenes, like, long before they're announced, even before they necessarily have, like, a date. Like, you know, they'll, like, agree on a fight, and it might end up being an undercard on one network or a main event on another network. And I think it's really interesting they ran with it. I mean, I kind of wonder if it was just because there was so much momentum in the fight, they just felt, you know, since we have generated so much positive buzz and so much goodwill, let's run straight into it. So that part of it's interesting, the notion that it seemed to be inaudible to announce it last night. The other thing was interesting, which again, it just like completely outflanks and just continues to kind of humiliate the situation of Terrence Crawford. You know, it's like his fights in December, this fight is going to completely overshadow Crawford versus Mean Machine. And again, it's not even like Crawford can, you know, call out Spence or, you know, let that hang over it as far as, oh, you know, it's like that whole ridiculousness. I mean, he's going to have a crappy fight against Mean Machine, and Spence already has a pay-per-view queued up for January, which is going to be promoted alongside the NFL playoffs. I mean, it's just crazy. Like Fox keeps upping the ante. I mean, I'm just so happy as a boxing fan. Yeah. What about you guys?
Well, I think, yeah, it does seem like they wanted to, keep the momentum going. The one thing, like, how would they know about that? And I'm thinking that they had a pretty good sense throughout the night how many sales they were doing digitally, how many people were ordering through the Fox app or going online. And I think maybe they looked at those numbers and like, hey, we might have a hit on our hands. Like, this is exceeding the last two pay-per-views that we've done. And therefore, they're thinking, yeah, we got something here with this Spence guy. We should probably just make it official. I think they probably always knew that that was a possibility, that Danny Garcia would fight the winner in January, assuming that Spence got away with the win there. So maybe it was basically contingent, like, here are our next two plans. Here's the next two moves. If this happens, we do this. If that happens, we're doing that. And then they had Porter's contingency plans of when the rematch would be. And so I think that date was always circled and it was always going to be a pay-per-view, but it just necessarily wasn't always going to be this fight. But it played out that maybe it made sense for this to be the fight for that January date. What do you think, Fred?
I'm pretty much in agreement with all the things. I think it is. It allows them to control the narrative a lot, you know, because now it's not Spence languishing and they're not going to get wrapped up in this Terence Crawford talk or anything. You know, they really say, okay, now people know, well, he's fighting in January. Crawford couldn't fight then anyway because he's got to fight in December. So it sort of steers people away from that, you know. So, it's a very smart move. That's it. It's just Fox is like they're kids in the candy store. They're just loving it because it's, you know, they're all on all highs because I think the costs really aren't that much compared to what they're used to dealing with, you know. So it's all upside for them.
This is kind of more of a general, like, conversation to have, not specifically related to this fight. But, like, do you think you would rather have it where you know basically within a day or two after a fight who guys are going to be fighting next? Because in other sports, like, you know who the Cowboys are playing next week and the week after that and the week after that. And I know boxing will never work like other sports do, but, you know, you never have any mystery of who's going to be playing who. We all know that until the postseason comes around, and then, you know, you generally know who's going to be fighting who at, like, just you can follow the matchups. And this is more of like a normal sports move where immediately you know what Spence is going to do next. Do you guys like that, or do you prefer finding your news out from Mike Coppinger at random times during the week?
Let me take that. Yeah. I, you know, it's an interesting topic. There are lots of reasons why you would or wouldn't do that. I mean, like, one of the reasons is you never want to have a future promotion hanging over a fight. Like, that's, you know, that's just sort of like conventional marketing thinking. Like, you are trying to sell one product. You don't want people to focus on another product.
Which is
you
why know, they announce their pay-per-views the way they've done it in the past.
Right, both as it relates to exactly their future, and they do that. They've done that for live events. Like, I've talked about that. There's so many times where they will, when I've been at the Barclays Center, and they announce the next Barclays, especially when they're doing, you know, so, you know, the overwhelming majority at the Barclays Center, where they'd announce the next one on the fight night. So it's like
also recently the Lomachenko and the Dillian White fights in the UK.
How I don't even know what
they basically.
Oh, right. Yeah.
To announce a Lomachenko fight.
Right. So they had the press. Yeah, exactly. For the Dillian White fight. Yeah, sorry. I sort of had to process. Yeah, the White fight was in July with the positive drug test. Yeah. And then the Lomachenko fight in August. Yeah. So
I thought we were forgetting about the drug test.
I haven't forgotten about that B sample. The rest of the boxing world has, not me. Yeah. So anyway, so it's like there's that thinking. I think this was really interesting how they did it because even during the broadcast, they were kind of teasing, like, there's a weird moment, like, you weren't there, and I don't know if you rewatched the whole thing or just the Spence Porter fight, but Keith Thurman like was sort of saying to Danny Garcia, you should fight if I'm remembering this correctly, I believe he was saying, you know, you should fight Josecito Lopez after that fight, like, you need a fight day, you should fight him. And it was kind of a weird moment because, like, Garcia didn't really seem upset. It was sort of like he knew something else, because you'd think that'd kind of be like putting like a lower level opponent on him. And like Spence, like, just again, getting back to the thing about the audible, I mean, it's such a weird, like, Spence didn't really seem to recognize that, like, they were announcing the Danny Garcia thing. Like, he was saying, I want to be back real soon. I want to be back maybe in January. Like, the PBC guys will never give an exact date until it's officially announced. But
I mean, he also, it was sort of
funny how these things were circling. Yeah. Well, and like, you know, Danny Garcia, again, kind of a similar thing. He's like, yeah, I'm going to be back soon. Maybe like towards the beginning of the year. And then like, again, when they
Ray Mancini.
Oh, Heidi Andrel.
Heidi Andrel, yeah. The other, yeah. Like, she announced, and again, it seemed to catch, like, a lot of people off guard. Anyway, over to you, Fred. I guess, like, as far as, I think the topic was why you would or wouldn't do this, or how, yeah. Yeah, anyway, go on.
You're just saying she's the better source than Mike Coppinger to follow. she broke the Garcia fight with... yeah, like a lot of times it won't work out. A lot of times they know fights a long time in advance, but sometimes it doesn't work, of course, because you've got to deal with sanctioning bodies. You've got to deal. Sometimes fighters change their mind. Sometimes they want more money. Sometimes they get injured. So it's tough to go. There's, you know, ups and downs for it. So, but this way it sort of works, you know. It, again, when they got all these PBC guys, when you're all running through Al Heyman, you know, it takes a lot of barriers out. You know, as Spence always started to say, he's like, we all got the same manager, so there shouldn't be any hangups in making fights. So that's what you get now. And you need a partner like Fox that wants to throw out a lot of money. So, So that helps too.
Well,
so,
those are the two big hurdles. And when you have those two hurdles out of the way, you know, it becomes a lot easier.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Unless you're Leo Santa Cruz and Gary Russell Jr., who won both. We can get into that in a little bit, but both are definitely playing their part in making fights difficult to get done.
For sure. No, that's all I've got to say on that.
All right. So last thing about Spence Porter. Why do you think that they didn't want to go for the rematch?
What do Spence you think? Porter?
Yeah.
Well, I think probably, I mean, look, if they really announced the Danny Garcia, Errol Spence fight, that means they had some deal in place. You can't just like tell Danny Garcia to fuck off in the moment, you know? So if it was contingent just on Spence winning, you know, they couldn't just jettison Porter. I think also, look, we all agree that Spence won a pretty convincing decision, even if it was a split decision. One of the official judges had it for Porter. There's some people online saying they thought it was, you know, some version of either a Porter win or like a coin flip fight where it could have gone either way. I think history will remember this for Spence. You know, it's like, I think having already rewatched the bit that I have, like, I don't think I'm crazy. I think the way that I saw it was correct. And also when you have that knockdown, like, you know, that really cements it for him. I think you can build to the Porter fight. I think people will, you know, rematch. I think people will remember that. But, you know, it's like Manny Pacquiao fought Marquez four times, fought Timothy Bradley three times, you know, fought Marquez multiple times, Pereira multiple times. Yeah, it's
Pereira
like
twice.
That's because it was Top Rank and they were dealing with a limited number of opponents. You know, it's like, let's not forget that. You know, that was Top Rank doing everything they could to make these fights in-house. You know, it's like PBC has options. You know, we should be happy that they're going to the Danny Garcia fight because they have so many names. And then after that, we could see a Keith Thurman fight. At some point, we could see a Manny Pacquiao fight. And those are just the ones on the immediate horizon in the same weight class, let alone talking about it moving up. Anyway, what do you think?
I think that there should be some talk about a rematch, but I'm okay with it. Like, I like new stuff. I don't necessarily... I do want to see the rematch. Don't get me wrong. I think it'd be a great fight. I just don't think that maybe now is the time to do it. I do like the Danny Garcia fight. I think it's a good meantime fight. I mean, we've talked about this in the past a lot, but really, like, guys can't fight really competitive fights, like, in consecutive fights over and over again. It literally will just ruin careers. Like the one concern I have about him going right into the Danny Garcia fight, and although this would help the Porter fight, but the Crawford fight, if it's going to happen the way I think it will, I think that Spence is at a potential to get injured at some point when you put your body under that stress, and you got to think like Sean Porter fight kind of stress in addition to weeks and weeks of training camp. It's not like they're just working out for 8 weeks. It's like working out and hard sparring. And then you actually do like have a world level fight. I mean, that puts a lot of strain on your body. You're seeing it with Lomachenko. You've seen it with with Thurman. These guys get hurt. Andre Ward, these guys get hurt. So it's tough, but I'm not unhappy with it. Let's move on. Let's talk about the David Benavidez and Anthony Durrell fight. Fred, how on earth was Benavidez allowed to keep fighting with that cut?
Why do you screwed up again? Because he didn't have a cut. Who are you watching?
Are you a California State Athletic Commission official?
Durrell had the cut.
Oh, did I get it wrong?
Yeah, you got it wrong in a rundown. You said it again.
Oh, I mean, geez, I make a typo. This guy's like being an idiot. You know what I meant?
Yeah, well, you get the wrong fighter.
You also could have just corrected the mistake.
Well, no, I'm going to jump on it. You're sitting there hanging with your media pals, playing grab ass there, and you're not even paying attention to the fight.
Listening to them complain about the... Never mind. Never mind. Let's just say... Never mind. I'm not going to get into it.
Well, yeah, it wasn't bleeding that much, I think, is why they let it go, even though it looked pretty nasty, you know.
But it was on the eyelid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just second that. That was my take, was like, it's a really nasty cut, but there isn't actually that much blood. Like that was what I was thinking while I was watching
it.
I saw a lot of people saying like
eye.
This is a horror movie, this is a horrible cut, how can they not stop? And it was like, yeah, but how much blood was there? Like, yeah, I agree with Fred.
And they weren't even throwing like 2 pounds.
You guys are acting like Ray Mancini here.
Yeah, Ray's like, ah, come on. That's not even a scratch.
Yeah, literally, that's probably what he would say. He's like,
I think it was, well, they looked at it more than once, though, too. So that they were keeping an eye on it. Yeah, so it was on the verge of it. If it would have been bleeding a lot more, and like I said, they weren't even, you look at Fury's cut, and they were throwing like 2 pounds of Vaseline every round on it. And they weren't even using that much for Durrell. So it was, you know, but it actually looked like they said they stopped the fight anyway, because they're like, hey, that's guys taking too many big shots.
I don't know. To me, it looked terrible when I would look at it on the screen, because obviously I'm not like in the ring, so I can't see like super detailed pics I don't have a super detailed view of the cut, but it looked terrible on the screen, and especially on the eyelid. Like, you know, I don't know what they wanted. Did they want like some of his brains to come out or something? Because I thought it should have stopped it.
Yeah, like as I said, soon as they looked at it, it was very close. But like he had sort of the same one on the other eyes last fight. That
how come you're not saying stopped? That they were just trying to like back up the Nevada commission officials? They were by not stopping Fury.
They were trying to save the fight with Wilder or something. No, I think it was. I think it was the
fight with Wilder.
if it would have been blind,
Durrell was going to fight.
Yeah, of course, they're saving the big paper.
Yeah, they can meet at cruiserweight. Yeah, I'd love that.
I think it was just the blood, and they looked really nasty. It was a nasty cut, but if it would have been bleeding more and blinding them, they probably would have stopped it right away.
Well, and I think like an important bit of context, and this kind of relates to the Fury thing as well. Like, if they had stopped it, it's a TKO loss. You know, so I think they were right. They were willing to defer to the fighter to some extent, and just, you know,
but
he said
it was,
you know,
a headbutt, wasn't it?
No, a punch. No.
Oh, it was a punch.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing: they should have stopped it because so after the cut happens, they let him go, but then Benavidez was just beating him up. So either way, the fight was going to wind up ending the same way. So why not just stop it?
Well, it's like this is the end of his career. Like, he's, you know, it's like. Again, if the fighter wants to keep going, and at the point when the cut started, it really wasn't like he wasn't really getting pillar to post. I mean, eventually he was, but yeah, I mean, and they did stop it. You know, it's not like the Fury fight where it went to the final round. I mean, you know, it's like, yeah, when he started, it's like he got the cut, but he was still fighting a little bit, and there didn't seem to be, you know, so much blood that it was crazy. And then eventually he did start to get beat up. And they stopped it. So it's like, okay. Yeah, I don't really mind how that played out.
All right, fine. What about this, guys? Do you think David Benavidez is the real deal, Tom?
Yeah, Fred, I feel like I've been hogging all the questions. Yeah, definitely. I thought it was super impressive. I mean, I was sort of disappointed in people shitting on Durrell coming in. Like, really, if you look at Durrell, I mean, there were some parallels with Porter where, like, he has not looked great, but he's a guy who's fought down to his level of competition, and he's fought well at a high level. You know, again, speaking of like the Badu Jack fight, knocking out Caleb Truax in one round. I mean, there are other examples in his, you know, very long career. And yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the fight. I mean, I loved how David Benavidez was walking him down. I mean, the facial expressions and stuff were a little bit much, but you know, he was trying to win the mental battle and the physical battle. And the way he put the punches together towards the end, I mean, it's just fantastic. I mean, I think people aren't going to give him the full credit for, you know, it's like, I think about Spence where it was like, what does he have to do? Like, people keep making excuses to qualify his performances. It's like, I thought Benavidez looked as impressive as he possibly could. I mean, you know, tons of great highlight reel combinations, you know, impressive stoppage of a rugged veteran guy who'd never come close to being stopped before, never really been hurt in his career. Yeah, I mean, I'm all on board. I mean, I've been on board for a while and he keeps impressing me. I mean, he had those sort of like weird split fights with, Gavriel. Yeah. So, yeah, this is cool. And I mean, Fox is all in on the 168. So I'm excited to see these fights.
What about you, Fred?
He's not unbeatable. Like, I think, you know, people, again, were way too negative. I thought he was going to take this fight just because Durrell's, because of the age. You know, I thought Benavidez would start to pull away from him, which he kind of did. The thing about Benavidez is like he's like one of those skinny fat dudes, so you really got to watch those guys, you know, because like he's not built, he's not defined, but the dude, he knows how to throw punches, so like he knows pure leverage on those things. So that's what I'll, you know, yeah, I like him a lot. I like him a lot. I think 168 there is really going to be a good division. You know, like, and Ray Mancini said in the broadcast, the thing is that he's an odd matchup. You know, he's a tough matchup for people just because of the way he's built.
Yeah, I mean, Benavidez is good. That's a good point you've got there. He's not built like anything special, but he keeps winning. So clearly there is something in there, even if it may not be obvious to the trained eye, or the untrained eye, maybe is what I meant to say. Kind of like Andy Ruiz. Andy Ruiz doesn't come in the traditional package, but when he beats Anthony Joshua for a second time, you know, it's like, wow, this guy is actually like something special here. Who would have thought that Andy Ruiz would have been a special fighter? Anyway,
I think you were high.
I was, but like, you know, who reads my nonsensical writing and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. No, the thing is with Benavidez, as I said, like, you look at him, he doesn't have big, huge arms. He doesn't, you know, he looks a little plodding, but he's not. He's like that. And he's only 22. You know,
I remember hearing about him when he was 15 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. That's he's got something going there. But that's it. He's has to fight against, like I said, people will watch a Gavril fight. And just because they don't know Gavril, they go, oh, he's just some Mayweather fighter. And sucks. You know, yeah, but Gavril's, you know, he's good. He has huge, solid. That's when people suddenly forget amateur backgrounds or something. You know, it means nothing to them. It's when they don't know of a guy or something. So, yeah, no, Benavidez, he'll be a good champion. That Plant fight should be good, too, because they like to talk shit about each other.
Let's move on. Mario Barrios, he won, I believe it was a unanimous decision. I can't remember. Against, was it Batir Akhmedov?
Yeah, that's close enough. And it was a unanimous decision.
Yeah. So somehow Mario Barrios to me looked like he lost the fight even though he won. And like, here's the thing. This was kind of similar. This was almost actually exactly like the Wilder Fury fight where I believe like, while I don't have the same point of view about this fight as the Wilder Fury fight, but what I mean is, like, when you get dropped twice or you drop the other guy twice, it's pretty hard to lose the fight just from a points perspective of how math works out. And Barrios won enough rounds early on and scored two knockdowns, should have been credited for a third one. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I thought that first, I believe it might have been the first round. It looked like Akhmedov's glove touched the canvas. But
oh, that was a big uppercut, but I honestly didn't notice that. I didn't remember the mention. Like, they didn't highlight that on the broadcast. So I'm going to say no, probably, like, upon replay. But, yeah, anyway. Still a good punch.
I don't know if I'll go back and look. Probably not. But whatever. That would only serve to further the case that Mario Barrios got some knockdowns that allowed him to win this fight. But really, he walked away the loser. Like, it was clear he was gassed after, like, six rounds. And he really had nothing left. And the saving grace of the fight was that he dropped Akhmedov in the final round. And, like, it was a legit knockdown. Like, really hurt him. And so, showing that Barrios has got some power and there's a lot for him to learn. And it looks like if Barrios were to develop some stamina, he would be a dangerous fighter. But that really isn't the case for where he's at right now. What do you guys think? How do you guys feel about a rematch? You think Barrios will win the rematch?
Do you want to go first, Fred?
Maybe. Like I said, that fight there, those first four rounds, was like Barrios is going to beat the living hell out of him. But then, yeah, he gassed and things went. And Virgil Hunter was telling him in the corner, he said, stop moving so much. You know, he's trying to get him to settle down. But, yeah, he sort of got something. Yeah, I think Barrios is a kid. He might learn from it, you know. It'll be tough. That other dude, the Turk, as Ray Mancini would call him,
he called him a Russian earlier in the week. And, it's yeah, like, and Kate Abdo, I think, corrected him. She's like, from Uzbekistan?
Well, it's Turkey.
Well, but fought for Turkey in the Olympics, but is sort of like when like Andre Berto fights for Haiti, even though he's an American.
I believe BoxRec lists him as being from like Crimea or something.
Yeah, see, I don't...
Yeah, the, yeah, that's about as Russian as a name that you can get, though. So you can't blame.
He's a
blame
man of the world. Let's leave it at that.
You can't blame Ray for that. But, that dude had a motor, though, on him. Like, he wasn't stopping.
He was pretty relentless.
Yeah.
And he found a way, because he was clearly much smaller, he found a way to make it work for him. Because earlier in the fight, he could not get inside, and Barrios was just teeing off on him.
Yeah. And then he did a lot of forehead work there in that fight too. You know, Jack Reese Ward or whoever was running that thing, they warned him a couple times, but he was using his headbutts a lot on Barrios.
I got no comment on that one. you think either of these guys could beat Mikey Garcia?
No.
Tom?
Yeah, no, and just my general thoughts on that, just to get, like, I have an Excel spreadsheet in front of me just to run down it. So I think, like, when you look at the scorecards, like, because, you know, the reason why I'm even talking about this, like, Lance Pugmire, LA Times, now of The Athletic, like, he had super pumped up Akhmedov beforehand. You know, he did sort of the boxing writer thing, like, he called his shot. And then when
even
I was watching the fight,
I called that shot years ago. But go on.
Well, right after the 2016 Olympics, that they were even going into the 2016 Olympics, how strong the Uzbekistanis were. But anyway, yeah. You know, and he was like, it's a robbery. Akhmedov won by 1 point. You know, just like, it's like the, it was like the Wilder Fury scoring all over again, where it was just like, oh my God. You know, there was, I think, general consensus Barrios won the first four rounds, including the knockdown in the fourth, and he got a knockdown in the 12th. So even if Akhmedov sweeps the rest of the cards, that's a draw. You know,
that's how I had it, I think.
I gave Barrios, I think it was the sixth. I gave him one more. I had two rounds marked as swing rounds, and I gave him one of those. I think it was like the fifth, Akhmedov came back reasonably strong after the knockdown, and then the sixth. Barrios was able to sort of get things back, settle down and under control, and landed some good shots. So, you know, it's the default score for this fight is a draw, just based on the very obvious things that happen. And then if you give Barrios one more round, it's a Barrios decision. So, yeah, it's like, I don't want to spend too long on that part. So it's like, I think a close Barrios decision is the correct outcome. That's how I had it. You know, something like a majority decision would be fine too, if maybe like one of the scorecards has been a draw, just give a different perspective. But it's like saying it's a robbery when like the maximum you could, you know, it's like you have to start giving Akhmedov 10-8 rounds in order to get the card for him off of a draw. So, but yeah, as far as how the fight played out, it's like totally Akhmedov, like, I think showed himself to be the better fighter. I don't think there's any question about that. You know, I mean, he was just, Barrios couldn't get away from the right hook. He couldn't get away from the left hand, really, to the point where it's just like, wow, just like, you know, send this kid back to the gym for, you know, it's like, you know, just have him spar southpaws for like 6 months. Like, I don't know what you do. Like, I mean, that was, you know, but he's a young fighter. I mean, just to pivot off of, or to close on this note, it's like, we talked about Barrios last week, and I think your question was like, is this going to be a star-making turn for him? Is this going to be his breakout performance? And at the time, I said, like, I think there are a lot of question marks about him. There are a lot of question marks about his opponent. Like, Akhmedov was an Olympian, as we said. He had World Series of Boxing fights, so he did have more experience than his record indicated. And, you know, he looked like it. He was, like, an older, more developed fighter. And, you know, the thing, though, is, like, sometimes, you know, it's like, again, Barrios got the two knockdowns. He got away with the win fair and square. He is now the PBC guy. He's, you know, Mexican-American. He has the belt. Like, he's, you know, it's like they're going to be able to build off this. Like, I think, you know, technically, I think he can only go up from the problems he displayed in this fight. I mean, it was a huge step-up fight. I think probably his team was gambling to some extent taking this fight. I mean, this was an opponent not chosen by the PBC. It was a fight chosen by the sanctioning body. And I think we're still going to see what I had said last week is like my prediction, which is if he comes out with a win, which he did, we'll see him headline on FS1 probably, and we'll start to build him up more. We might see him on some other high profile undercards. You know, we'll see how bad his injuries were. I haven't seen any reports on that. I mean, I haven't looked into it. It's probably published. I don't know if he has any facial fractures or any similar things. I mean, his, you know, face was messed up, but it's like, I just like the last thing I'll say, like, I'm always a believer in young fighters. Like, even though we shit on Ryan Garcia, like, he's still young. He still has a lot of physical tools. Like, there's still a lot you can do with that, you know? And I just would say the same thing about Mario Barrios. You know, it, like, he came up with that punch in the 12th round. Like, I really, like, you know, that means a lot. That really means a lot. That means a lot to his confidence. That means a lot to his technical ability. I mean, this wasn't, you know, Victor Ortiz got in this situation against Maidana and he quit. You know, Barrios hung in there and he scored a knockdown in the 12th round to pull out the fight. Like, that really says a lot to me. So it's not that I'm overlooking the technical problems. That's one of those things where you just kind of, you know, your ears perk up and it's like, you know, maybe there is something interesting with this kid. You know, we'll find out.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that there's literally nothing in common that Barrios has with Victor Ortiz. Certainly not any allegations that he may have that would have fights be canceled. But
I think it's a good comparison, but certainly don't mean to compare their personal lives. I don't think I implied that, but okay.
I've also never seen Barrios try to blatantly headbutt somebody in a fight, but you know, I could be wrong. Anyway, let's move on. Josecito Lopez and John Molina Jr. This fight was pretty entertaining live, and I don't want to spend too much time on it. But it looked like Molina knew, like, as soon as the bell rang, he's like, okay, my only shot is I'm going to catch him with something big. And so he basically had this sellout counterpunching style where he would just, like, throw his hardest shot while Lopez was, like, throwing combinations. And, like, he actually landed a few times to the point where Lopez started to get hesitant, and there were a couple of rounds where it was pretty dull. But otherwise, it was entertaining. It was a good opening fight. Did it come off that way on TV?
Fred?
Yeah, I thought it was entertaining. And Goosen said that, too, you know, because, of course, he's got such a history of Molina. He said he thought it was a really bad decision that he had his left hand two down, like, trying to counter punch. He just said it's not a reflexes anymore. You know, it's not the good game plan for him. You know, Molina's a pressure guy.
It's but, actually a good, you know, point.
Yeah, they well, of course, from
good
Joe Goosen. So,
although he would yeah, know Molina better than anybody.
Yeah, he might know a thing or two about boxing. so yeah, it was an entertaining fight. You know, and again, Josecito Lopez, you know, he's getting a second wind. You know.
Yeah, I think you know, it's like we've enjoyed some of these old man sort of sloppy brawls, like, you know, Quillen against Angulo the week before. Molina is one guy I'd like to see hang up. Like, I don't want to put a damper on it, but it's like I would like to see him retire. He's taken a lot of punishment in his career. You
I
know,
think
we'll
he
see.
Should fight Humberto Soto.
Oh boy. riding that career resurgence right now, but yeah, I think it was a good matchup.
Don't want to see that, then I don't want to talk to you.
good opener, and I think Josecito Lopez, you know, this was exactly the fight he needed. I think I believe that's what I had said last week. I don't know if it's just in hindsight I'm trying to, if you know, revise history here, but look, he had that sort of moral victory against Keith Thurman. Although, you know, I was at that fight and I've said it wasn't as close as it looked on TV outside of that one round. But, you know, you want to build off that momentum. You don't need to beat, you know, it's like you don't need to go into a fight against like Ugas or something where it's like, OK, yeah, you know, I wouldn't pick Lopez to win that fight. But it's like, yeah, I think he has made himself into an appealing B-side to a lot of different fighters. See a Broner fight, you know. I was saying, I still think of Sean
Broner
Porter
and Lopez. That's great.
Yeah, wouldn't that
be a good
fight?
That's not what I'm hearing. What's going to happen with Broner? But I like that.
Yeah.
Fight.
So I that's
what about Brandon
yeah,
Rios?
Your thoughts? No, Brandon Rios. But the point is, yeah, it's just Lopez has built himself into like a pretty good B side against pretty much anyone who needs a fight at welterweight on the PBC side.
Lopez versus Jamal James. You can book that one.
Good fight, for sure. I mean, that'll sell at the Armory, no question. You know, load up the undercard with
PBC
prospects.
Fight me at the Armory and sell it out.
You're getting your business done.
Oh, man. Josecito Lopez, man. This dude, I think it's going to be Robert Guerrero versus Josecito Lopez.
Yeah, another guy needs to retire. But
Nope. If Robert Guerrero versus Humberto Soto.
you're really on the Soto train.
Dude, I just want these guys to get paid. Humberto Soto has like 80 pro fights. This dude needs some paydays.
But he's on the wrong side of the street, though. He's with the zone.
There's no sides of the streets. Tim Bradley says there's no sides of the street.
Yeah.
I actually forgot he got KO'd by Jesse Vargas. I was thinking that he was still riding off the Brandon Rios win. Okay, so I was sort of only half joking when I was talking about his career momentum. Yeah, totally forgot the Vargas KO loss. Totally forgot that fight happened.
Josecito Lopez versus Ramon Alvarez. Ramon Ooh. Alvarez versus Humberto Soto, actually. Think about that, guys. Think about it.
You get on the horn with PBC.
I think you're a lot more fascinated by Humberto Soto than I am at 10:49 p.m. on a Sunday night right now.
This is the only topic that gets me going. Wilder and Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz, they did a press conference for their upcoming rematch that'll be on pay-per-view. I only have one question. I want to get into this a lot, but there's just not enough time. We got to wrap things up. But really, is this the best case scenario for Deontay Wilder, given that Tyson Fury is over there fighting the finest fighters from Europe, and Andy Ruiz and Anthony Joshua are tied up with their rematch? Is this the best fight for Wilder?
Fred?
Yeah. Like we said, we knew this fight was going to come for a while, and that's it. It's an intriguing fight, you know. So right now, it's a much bigger challenge than what Fury's been looking at. But yeah, so Wilder, that's it. People said he got saved in that last fight, so you can build a little bit off that. You know, so it's a good fight.
Who got saved more, Fury with the cut or Wilder in the Ortiz fight?
Fury, definitely.
Tom, you agree?
I'm just like, New York State Athletic Commission, you know, they do those things where they'll take, you know, extra time before a round. I mean, yeah, I love this fight. As I said, at some other point in this podcast, I was at that fight live. It was, you know, one of the, I don't know, strongest emotional reactions from an arena I've seen, just through the ups and downs of that fight. I think it's very, you know, I'm not going to say that this is like the Super Bowl of boxing, but I think it's a good fight. I think it's another interesting Wilder, you know, rematch. Like, you know, we had the Bermaine Stiverne fight. That was his only fight that had gone the distance. He blew him out. I think it will be interesting to see, like, if he, you know, can really build off, if he can pick up the last fight where it left off and close Ortiz early. And it'll be interesting to see if Ortiz can, you know, it's like, I definitely wouldn't put it past him to catch Wilder, you know? Look, every Deontay Wilder fight is a gamble. You know, people, it's like that always happens in the sport. There's a phenomenon. Like you mentioned the Jose Benavidez Terrence Crawford fight. Like, because Crawford got the knockout in the 12th, people forget how much trouble he had in the middle of the fight, that he was getting at times outboxed in the middle of the ring by someone who only had one good leg. It's like, that's Deontay Wilder's, like, most of his fights, you know, where he's having trouble taking a fair amount of punishment. I mean, that even to some extent happened in a microcosm in the first round knockout of Brazil in May. Like, Wilder did get clipped with a pretty good shot and then finished him off. You know, there's no easy Deontay Wilder fight. You know, again, to the point of saying this isn't the Super Bowl boxing, I mean, it's like, how crazy, like, what a position of strength the PBC and Al Heyman are in, that Fox and Showtime are fighting each other to deliver a fight that a year ago people would have complained was on pay-per-view even to begin with. You know, I mean, that's the part I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to Fox putting, I mean, I loved the Spence Porter promotion. And, you know, if they're going to do that in the heart of the football season with Deontay Wilder, I mean, Deontay Wilder is the type of guy who could benefit, you know, Spence to some extent, like his whole career, they've kind of developed him as basically like, he would have been a pro football player if he were a little bigger. Like, that's his personality. That's his background. He's friends with a lot of friends with a lot of the Cowboys. Like, Deontay Wilder is a guy where it's like, you know, I talked about that with ESPN trying to push Fury, but I mean, you can push him as a legit pro athlete. You know, you put him on a talk show with, you know, NFL players, and, you know, he looks like every bit the professional athlete of them in terms of, you know, the physical size, the condition. I just can't wait to see how Wilder can cross over with that kind of marketing push. I mean, I know it's sort of funny to say that, and it's sort of playing into the brand of myself and the podcast, but I'm as interested to see the promotion as I am the fight. And, you know, just from, you know, really the financial standpoint, how that will, you know, what kind of trajectory his career can take if he can get that kind of push with Fox.
Well, I also think, like, Deontay Wilder is just larger than life. I mean, whether you like him or not, whether you like his long soliloquies that he goes into whenever he's got a mic in his hand, whether you like it or not, it's engaging. You can't doubt the charisma he's got. He's engaging, you know? So it will be interesting to see how they promote him. I think absolutely this is the best case scenario. I mean, people are rewriting history by saying Wilder got rid of Luis Ortiz easily. He's an old man, blah, blah, blah. Like, is everyone forgetting how upset they were about the cards at the time of the stoppage? Everyone thought Wilder should have been down on the cards.
Except me.
Well, I mean, Tom, you're a goddamn shill, so relax.
No, I just joke because, like, you got so much shit for your scorecard last night. I'm like, yeah, I got too. a ton of shit for my scorecard on that card.
Yeah, but there's just a difference. You're a shill, and I'm not.
Okay, noted.
So anyway, where am I going with this? Anyway, the point is, this is a dangerous fight for Wilder. Millions of monies could be dollars could be lost if Wilder were to somehow get caught in this Ortiz fight. But that's heavyweight boxing. And Wilder was saying it at the press conference. This is heavyweight boxing. Anything can happen, and that's the beauty of it. Let's keep it moving and talk briefly about Sergey Derevyanchenko challenging the former unified... Was he unified? Yeah, he was. Unified middleweight champion of the world, Gennady Golovkin. Be sure, guys, to check out the website this week. I have a piece coming on Golovkin previewing this fight. A lot of fun putting the piece together. We have two pieces actually coming. Just really looking at Gennady Golovkin's career and the influence Golovkin's had. I mean, Golovkin's had such a tremendous influence on the sport of boxing. You guys have no idea, but that'll be over on the website. Let's talk about Sergey Derevyanchenko and like the possibility that he could give Gennady Golovkin any trouble. Because, I mean, like, the general consensus is like, okay, Sergey Derevyanchenko, not that well-known. Gennady Golovkin, one of the bigger stars in boxing. And I mean a boxing star, we're not a crossover, but Golovkin's the kind of guy that most boxing fans would tune in to watch him fight. So, the reputation of two is like, oh, well, Golovkin's going to blow Derevyanchenko out, just like he's a Steve Rolls. Well, do you think that that's the case, or do you think Derevyanchenko could trouble him, Fred?
I think Sergey can give him a fight. And Golovkin's right hand isn't what it used to be. It's gone, apparently. I'm the only one who notices it. But, you know, he can. Because, like I said, Danny Jacobs, he knew how to handle Jacobs. You know, we'll see. It could be a good fight. I'm not going to say he's going to take out Golovkin or anything. But, like I said, for me, it all depends on how Sergey comes at him. If he wants to sort of slug it, I think Golovkin could probably take it because he's still got the power edge. But we'll see.
Yeah, I'm bullish on this fight, so I'm going to be there in person. At Madison Square Garden. I think this is
Are
like
you gonna try
one
to
of...
fight Chris Mannix.
look, I think this is one of the best fights on paper of Golovkin's career, and you know we always clown Golovkin for his resume, but you know, it is pretty thin in terms of good opponents. He fought a lot of terrible opponents for a long time. You really have to kind of comb through, and it's like, I don't know, Kasim Uma, however much you cared about that. Certainly Daniel Jacobs and Canelo were good fights, but, you know, one was a close decision. One was, you know, it's like we don't really need to relitigate those scorecards, but on a paper, one was a draw and was a majority decision. So Derevyanchenko, on paper, very good opponent. I've enjoyed watching him fight, seen many of his fights. Fought in the World Boxing Super Series, separate from his, you know, traditional pro career. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, there are different ways to look at it. I mean, I think the sort of best thing you can say about him, for better or worse, is that he's kind of a poor man's Golovkin. But, you know, as Fred said, it's like Golovkin's getting older and slowing down. Derevyanchenko is a tough fighter. He has the same team behind him as the team that trained Daniel Jacobs when they fought Golovkin. So they have some familiarity with Golovkin already. They can possibly build off of things that Jacobs could do. I think this would be a good fight. I mean, there's a whole other topic of like the total, and I mean total lack of promotion for the fight.
But I don't want to do a podcast where we were praise the PBC pay-per-view from last night, and then we just dump all over the promotion.
I just put over the fight as hard as I could. I mean, look, also on the card, you know, we have Brancic, unfortunately, against nothing opponent, but we have a bunch of good Eastern European process. Yeah. Israel Madrimov is going to be on there. So, yeah, I mean...
Isn't Israel Madrimov like the guy that says that Golovkin doesn't want to fight him?
I'm not even going to... I don't know.
Yeah.
I think if that happened, I haven't heard that story. I love this guy. I love when prospects come out with this wild confidence. Except when Amir Khan did it, when Amir Khan like was like 7-0, and he's like, nah, give me Floyd Mayweather. It's like, bro, you're fighting two divisions below, and you've already been wobbled in your career. You need to relax.
Well, one quick thing on Madrimov, like he, you know, it's like he's only 3-0, but had a very good career in the World Series of Boxing, which, you know, I'm in terms of like prior to the start of a pro career, whether, you know, it's like whether you want to consider those pro fights, it's like World Series of Boxing does mean a lot to me in the same way that I'm pretty, it's like muted more on like the Olympics and like, you know, amateurs, especially like the older version of the amateurs when they still had the headgear on and they had like the touch scoring. And he's got an interesting opponent. He's fighting Alejandro Barrero, who fought Spence and when Spence was like really a prospect, but also fought Carlos Adames and gave Adames a really close fight that really could have edged to Barrera. So, you know, it's only like his third fight and he has a chance to kind of embarrass Top Rank's top fighter at 154. So yeah, I like that fight too.
Yeah, I don't like your take about Derevyanchenko being like a version of Golovkin. I really don't like it. I think for some reason it just rubs me wrong. Like, you know, just because they're Eastern European guys don't mean they're similar. Golovkin is a Mexican fighter, so that's not Derevyanchenko. Derevyanchenko is just
cleared up.
Derevyanchenko is just one with
Ukrainian style versus Mexican style.
Well, also he's just a guy that can't really, that has no defense. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this fight. I think Derevyanchenko is an interesting fighter. If he can take Golovkin's punches, and Fred makes the point, which is appropriate, like Golovkin's losing power. His legs are going, the right hand is not what it used to be. And if that's the case, he could get dragged into like a pretty, like, I mean, Derevyanchenko mixes it up and it could be a war. And I don't know that Golovkin can really stand to be in much more wars. I mean, he's in fight two of his 6-fight deal with Dazen. They're paying him like $100 million, which is pretty cool for him. But like, I don't know. I don't know if he wants to get into these wars. If he does get the Canelo fight down the line, it may be a knockout loss instead of, you know, just a clean decision for Canelo. So I also want to shout out a couple of fights that we didn't talk about. Kerman Lajaraga, at one point considered one of the top welterweight prospects in the world, but then he got knocked out in the first round by David Avanesyan. Got knocked out in the first round again by David Avanesyan. Wasn't a fluke, although the fight was stopped really early. They probably should have let him go on. Ray Mancini would have probably got in the ring and fought the referee. Oh, wait, it wasn't the first round last time. I think it was, like, the 9th round. But, you know, he got knocked out for the second time. So, first time around, probably wasn't a fluke. This guy can't take a punch. Shout out to Archie Sharp, who's got the best haircut in boxing. Shout out to Andrew Selby, Lee Selby's brother, who got dropped twice by basically a journeyman. And yeah, there's not much else to talk about this weekend, but we got to wrap this up, guys. It is late. I want to thank you two for staying up late to talk boxing. I wish we could have done this after the fight last night, but the podcast would have been wholly emotional. I probably would have gotten into a shouting match with one of these guys. And,
you're too busy schmoozing there.
Hey, man, I'm not even going to say what I want to say because I just really should not. So anyway, thanks for being on, guys. You too. I hope you guys enjoyed the fights. And I hope you guys check out the article that I'm going to put out this week. We've got a couple of articles. Starting a new series every week. We're going to, mostly every week, we'll take one guy fighting in a main event, maybe. Most of the time it'll be a main event. But we will basically take their career and find the 10 best gifts, either for the fighter or the fight, to kind of like represent their career, get you hyped for the fight. We also got a Patreon where I'll probably do more. There'll be more content about the Wilder Ortiz press conference, as well as any other general news that pops up during the week. So be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast if you enjoyed it. Share it. That really helps when you share it on Twitter, things like that. Otherwise, Tom, Fred, it was great talking to you guys, and we will be back very soon.
Yeah, always happy to be on.